Senator Johnson, can we get you on the COVID cover-up? So why do you think legacy media such as CNN is not covering this?
Why aren't you covering this?
I want to ask you about Iran, the war in Iran.
You know, you really ought to cover the fact that Peter Marks knew on March 1st of 2021 that their algorithms were hiding safety signals. 26 days later, found out 25 serious adverse events like sudden cardiac death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of strokes, and they buried it. They hid it. It's a major scandal. It's even as big a scandal that the major media is completely ignoring the story. It's been out now for almost 6 weeks.
Before the COVID pandemic, Dr. Fauci, as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, work which is now widely viewed as the source of the unintentional lab leak that sparked the pandemic.
What they thought was going to happen during Biden and Kamala, that they would take out a lot of my generation and older, clear the deck, turned out the bioweapon wasn't fully tunable. And guess what happened?
We took out the wrong demographic.
They took you out. Before COVID begins in 2019, we get this guy from Harvard University arrested at the airport, caught with 21 vials of nanobat technology. His name's Charles Lieber. Two guys from China who worked in Wuhan gets arrested with him. They take the 21 vials away. He's the expert in wideband technology. That was what they were going to use to tune the bioweapon to take us out. They had to redeploy and put that stuff in Ukraine because they had to protect China from stealing this technology. Who wasn't ready? Pfizer. So what does Pfizer decide to do? They go downstairs three floors to their genetic department and they find SV40. They use SV40 to design their jab because they're late to the game. And what do they then do? They tell their scientists to use a molecular tool to take the evidence of SV40 out, and then they present a clean version to the FDA and they get approved.
CDC awarded Pfizer $735 million plus dollars for infant COVID shots, paying them, and the government tried to say it was mandatory when it wasn't, to then poison babies with it. This is the pure evil, the kind of stuff they've been trying to suppress the public from knowing. Then they also paid the federal government over $2 billion to major pharmacies. Most of it went to CVS and Walgreens to not prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, even though the elites were all taking it, and it was proven to be very effective.
How many thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people are permanently disabled or possibly lost their life because our FDA hid the fact that there were safety signals screaming at them with the COVID injection?
I got to tell you, Maha should be in an outrage. This was a massive issue on the campaign. It's still a massive issue. Many parents do not want their children to ever receive a COVID vaccine shot. Why? Kids don't need it.
Good job, MTG. Now, here I am in 2009, 2010, and 2011, exposing UN documents, WF planning, Operation Lockstep, CIA, John Hopkins. People ask how to know about lockdown, 6 feet apart, masking. They admitted it was about training you to be a slave, to be locked in your house. Once cell phones got up to a point they could track and control you, which they had way before COVID, they were going to implement this as the new slave control grid. That's how I knew.
Rockefeller study envisions future dictatorship controlled by elite, millions being killed, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, the end of the family, everything that's in the other documents. But this dovetails with all the other Rockefeller Foundation documents about the GMO food to sterilize you and the forced vaccines and the hell we're already living in. This is going to continue to intensify until we take our governments back from these eugenics madmen. These people are so arrogant that they write policy papers, so many of them, that they're producing these policy papers and reports and white papers so fast that you could never read them all. It is an open conspiracy against you and your family. The only chance we've got of beating this scientific dictatorship, this creeping death that takes its time to incrementally enslave you, mentally, psychologically, physically, spiritually, the only way to defeat it is for the rank and file of this planet to realize that you have a choice to make on what your destiny is going to be. Once you face this information, once you've consciously admitted it to yourself, it will take over your life. It should take over your life.
Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on Tri-Iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat. High quality. With a nice leather patch made in the USA, just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, the concept. 1776, Redneck Deluxe. I mean, that is good stuff with the two crossed musket rifles. That is a good-looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon. Hope you're all doing well. Hope everybody had a good Father's Day. It was quite a weekend. Quite a weekend worth of news. I have more videos than is responsible at all. But like half of them are from the Jewish News Syndicate, the JNS meeting that happened over the weekend, where a bunch of people said a bunch of crazy things. I'd like to go to some of those videos, including people like Mark Levin and Benjamin Netanyahu and many others. Of course, the Iranian MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, the lead up ostensibly to a peace deal or a ceasefire of some sort, is just...
You think with your little podcast...
Oh, no. Mark Levin is here.
You think your little podcast, you're going to be able to stop Israel? We're not going to let you run your country. Why don't you shut your mouth, traitor? Trump's not going to bully us either.
Is this what it's like to be Trump?
Did you see the size of my brooch? I wear a woman's brooch.
Do you see the meme I sent you, by the way?
No.
Of Mark Levin and all the different nationalities. He's there, and it's the big German flag, and he's got the big France flag in every setting. He's going, we must support Israel. Absolutely.
Really,
it's the costume.
That?
Well, it's just a meme of him. You know, if he was in any other country, he'd be saying exactly the same thing. Folks, I was just invaded by Mark Levin. I just got a little taste of what it's like to be Donald Trump getting
you
yelled at.
Your mouth, Buster.
I'm just trying to get peace, sir.
Don't say Israel runs anything or you're a Nazi, because we're in control and we'll get your ass fired.
That's right. I'll get Kanye Wested. How dare I say they would do such a thing? They'll do it to prove me how wrong I am. Yeah, we're going to talk about Mark Levin
actually,
for sure.
The neo-Zionist movement is as alive as this.
To be or not to be?
That is the question.
See. Put it right on top. That's kind of cool, actually.
I could be I'm Mark Levin. We're the up-and-comers. We're the boomers. Endless war
that's
and
right.
Cancer. Look at my brain. It's big. COVID.
this is the Israel first GOP. Yeah, it's alive and well.
We are the future.
It's a pretty detailed
Don't argue thing. With me, racist. Why do you love Hitler? We need to take all of Lebanon, burn it all to the ground, kill everyone.
Can I be on Fox News now?
That's pretty cool, actually. A skull cap yarmulke. No more sacred cows. We love everybody, but we're not going to be bullied around until we're Hitler anymore. This is the backlash to it. Sorry, I got to mark them in here.
That's a death threat, you know.
No, it's not. It's a joke. It's a metaphor that your political movement is as alive as a skull, pal. That's the meaning of it.
Pretty much.
We don't want no Mark Levins were hurt in the filming of this.
The crazy thing is, they could so easily get back on track.
Who do you think you are, that little podcast, huh? I'm out of here.
This is what it's like, folks. This is what it's like. He's right there. Mark Levin.
You on TV. Let me tell you something, you Americans. Shut your mouths and do what I tell you. You know what's good for you.
That's it, our representative of the Israel First GOP. Yeah, right there. Not long for this world. This is kind of creepy.
Oh, think so? Oh, you know it's fake. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. That was Mark Levin. Mark Levin is here.
Oh, sure.
I don't work for Israel. What a ridiculous thing, Mark Levin working for Israel. That video, too, and I saw Alex play it earlier today, when he's literally got Donald Trump in a headlock. That video alone, who have you ever seen treat Donald Trump that way and get away with it, let alone even just try to treat somebody like that? I can see the crew working on a, there it is, working on the meme here. I just watched the crew whip that up in about 15 seconds, folks. And when we say we have the best crew in the business, it's this type of stuff. They're too small. The pins are too small, frankly. How are we supposed to know that he's a patriot? They need to be bigger. They need to be bigger than his face. Bigger. And you know, it's funny. I think it was at the JNS last year that he made that speech where he said, "You think your little podcast is going to change the world? Think again, pal. Think again." Well, what an interesting year it's been. What an interesting year of going from, "You think your silly little podcast is going to change anything," to, "These podcasts are destroying us. Actually, these podcasts are winning the Eighth Front War, and we're going to have to move to more extreme measures to regain our dominance." It's not been a great year for the Israel Firsters. And yes, they did hold this Jewish News Syndicate. It's funny, we did a Moonbase Live episode yesterday. I brought up the Jewish News Syndicate. My co-host John, who wasn't familiar with the organization, didn't know what I was talking about, but didn't question it at all. Was like, "Oh, we're talking about the Jewish News Syndicate?" And I said, "Yeah, it's this organization." He was like, "Oh, wait, it's an actual thing. I thought that was just sort of common parlance. I thought you were talking about CNN and CNBC. Mark Levin blasts Trump administration over Israel. Stop smashing, trashing, smearing, bullying ally. And look, what is the appetite for abusing Mark Levin? Because I would like to go through that video of Mark Levin, because it's one of these things, and certain people are good at this. And to be honest, in a lot of cases, it's like it's a radio personality trait. And I just say this because I just have personal experience. And even when I was like in high school, literally, I'll tell you a funny story. When I was in high school and my dad was convinced I was becoming a communist or something, he would send me talk radio of like Michael Savage or Mark Levin. And I would take it as a challenge. And then I would want to go through and systematically debunk everything that the person said. And what I realized is that certain people like Mark Levin have a very, in some cases, admirable, certainly astonishing ability to say things to leave you with the feeling as if they've made a really good argument about something. But then if you go back and you actually parse it and you actually look at each sentence and what he's actually saying and the point he's actually making, there's no point there. If there is a point, it's contradicted by another point that's there. So I don't know. Is the crew sick? Is the audience sick of trashing Mark Levin? Because I could go through that line by line where he's talking about, he's like, "You're bullying Israel, this tiny little country. Never did nothing to no one." And you go through it and the whole thing, there is no argument. There is no evidence. I mean, there's nothing. It's just assertion after assertion after assertion. It's just basically the argument is him just saying, "Stop it. Stop it. You're bullying Israel. Stop it." And it's just like, no, what are you talking about? That's not an argument. It's not a reason. There's no moral imperative there. It's just a demand to shut up. Like, that's literally the entire argument. But you listen to it, and I can understand how people who aren't thinking critically and just sort of no filter, just letting the information come in, they might think that, "Wow, that was a really persuasive and powerful argument." There's no argument. There is no argument. They have abandoned argumentation. Now, they did that a long time ago, but it's been especially interesting because what it used to be was they abandoned argumentation by simply calling you a panican, calling you, claiming that you've betrayed Trump and that you're no longer MAGA and you are, in fact, AOC or something like that. That was before. Now, they're the ones that are against Trump. They can't really use that argument anymore. So the argument they're going with is, "Well, just shut up." Well, just shut up now, actually. That's the argument they're making. Which would be hilarious if the average American were capable of recognizing the blatant hypocrisy and contradictions that are constantly spilling out of these people. But again, you listen to the guy and it makes, it sounds like he's actually made a point. It sounds like he's actually said something of value, but he hasn't. It's just a trick. That's actually just a trick. But he's not the only one making statements that not just deserve to be, but I almost have an obligation to debunk and explain the reasoning behind it. So we're going to go to a lot of videos like that today, Netanyahu and others making statements at the Jewish News Syndicate that beggar belief and are truly astonishing in their brazenness, the chutzpah. But where are we now? But where is everything? Where do we stand? To be honest with you, I don't even know. I cannot make heads or tails of this. It seems like the longer we are in this conflict, the more insane and untrustworthy absolutely everybody becomes. And it does, there is a genuine phenomenon where everybody goes insane when Israel's involved. I don't even think I pulled it in, but there's a video where in the UN, the diplomats are literally yelling and cursing each other out. And it's because the Israeli diplomat was furious that the UN actually decided to, you know, punish Israel in a minor way for its deliberate and systemic use of sexual abuse as a weapon of war. And he was so outraged by this, he starts insulting the person who's saying it. And they have to try to sanction Israel for personal attacks amongst diplomats, which is totally illegal, or, you know, not allowed by the UN rules. And they're all just literally yelling. I mean, it's the UN, which, say what you want about the UN. The one thing that would actually, you know, benefit anybody is preserving some sense of decorum in that organization. At least putting across the illusion that this is a place where countries can come together. Despite our differences, we can all negotiate like adults. We can all talk about this like human beings with respect for one another. And then Israel gets involved and it becomes a giant shouting match. And that's just how this has been the entire time. And then when it comes to the negotiations, genuinely no idea. I have to actually check. First you have to check the date of when the thing was uploaded. Then you have to ask Grok, was this uploaded as soon as it happened? Because you have no way of knowing. And it could be, you know, 12 hours later and everything is completely different. And oh, it turns out you were using a statement from 12 hours ago that wasn't true in the first place, but now things have totally changed. So what I can tell you is J.D. Vance is currently in Switzerland. He's making statements about the Iranian agreement. But again, just to go through. So today is June 22nd. On June 20th, now one would think, news cycle, a story of this monumental importance, the, you know, you would think the gears, you know, working in the background, trying to get a substantial and long-lasting peace agreement on the table. You would think there'd be a little bit of calm, collected, thoughtful procedure through all of this, but no. Everything is changing extremely rapidly, and I can't tell you what's true and what's not. Because literally, I have statements from J.D. Vance. And, you know, you can talk about rumors, you can talk about innuendo, you can talk about, but typically what's coming from one of the chief executives, one of the two chief executives of the United States, you would think you'd be able to trust that. But then you've got statements from the Iranian prime minister that contradict what J.D. Vance said. So was J.D. Vance mistaken? Did I mishear him when he talked? I mean, it's all just completely wonky and insane. And guys, I'm not sure if it got renamed, but I had one. Because this is what I have to do. I have so many videos from J.D. Vance over the weekend, and I'm trying to put them in order. What I have is I labeled one video new. I said new J.D. Vance. This is the latest statement he made. So we'll work backwards. We'll start with what has just occurred, and then try to work backwards to figure out how we got here and whether this is going to be maintained or whatever. So let's go to clip 44 here. This is the latest, just minutes ago. This is J.D. Vance on his way to the plane. He's touting his successful trip in Switzerland to finalize the Iran deal. So this is the latest as of, let's see, can you scroll down? This is Nick Sortor posted it. Scroll down a little bit. I want to see when this was posted. Just want to make sure. I want to guarantee. What time? All right, 12:40 p.m. All right, so that was a couple hours ago. Things may be entirely different now, but as of around 1 p.m. today, this was the latest from Vice President J.D. Vance.
All right, guys, good to see you. Well, again, I feel great about the progress that we made over the last couple of days. We're looking forward to going back home. It's been a very long day. I know the reporters had a long day as well, so I appreciate you guys. But look, the fundamental thing we got is, number one, we set up the mechanism to ensure not only the Straits of Hormuz are open, but will stay open. We saw, we think, about 15 million barrels of oil come out. That's one of the reasons why oil is so low right now. Obviously, that means lower gas prices, and gas prices are going to keep coming down. Number two, we actually set up the right mechanism to ensure the regional ceasefire to manage the inevitable conflicts that will come up. We feel great about that. We're working with our allies, from the Israelis to the Gulf Arabs, to make sure that sticks, and we feel very, very good about where that is. We have the Iranians allowing weapons inspectors, nuclear inspectors into their country for the first time in a long time. We're obviously going to bolster those inspection regime to make sure they can never have a nuclear weapon. And finally, we continue to make progress on these technical negotiations. We left a lot of our team, the Iranians left a lot of their team at the resort there to keep on working at. So all in all, a very productive 36 hours. We're going to have to keep working it. The last point that I'll make is, as I told you all this morning, this is laying a foundation for what could be a truly transformed Middle East. But we haven't built the house yet. We're going to have to keep on building, and that's what we'll do.
All right. So sounds pretty good there from Yahoo News. Progress, say mediators, after U.S.-Iran talks towards ending war. Iran and the United States agreed Monday to set up communication lines to keep the vital Strait of Hormuz open and end fighting in Lebanon, mediators said, after their first round of talks in Switzerland towards ending the war in the Middle East. The team led by U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and Iran's Mohammed Bagher Ghalibaf opened talks Sunday as part of the two-month negotiation period set out under a preliminary deal agreed last week. Mediators Pakistan and Qatar said the negotiators reached agreement on a roadmap towards reaching a final deal within 60 days, with technical talks to continue for the rest of the week at the Swiss resort of Bürgenstock. Encouraging progress has been made, including the creation of a mechanism for further technical talks, they said, detailing a contact channel set up to avoid incidents and miscommunications at the Strait of Hormuz. A deconfliction cell between the two parties and the Lebanese authority has also been agreed upon to prevent fighting from erupting again. I like how they're just like inventing. I've never heard of any of this. I've never heard of a war having a memorandum of understanding prior to a peace settlement or a ceasefire. I've never heard of a deconfliction cell being necessary to manage, you know, one particular aspect of a war. It's like, why are we inventing new met? We want peace. We want an agreement. We want peace. I guess these are the steps that we have to take to get there. And God only knows if this is actually going to end anytime soon. Again, we've been laying out the reality of the situation since the beginning. And the reality is that Israel went all in on this series of wars from Gaza, eventually leading to the overthrow of Iran. And they went all in on this. They have gambled everything for this. It has not paid off. It is, in fact, completely failed to achieve any of the goals that they set out at the beginning, up to and including eliminating the ballistic missiles or nuclear program there. It has been an utter failure. The economic effects will continue to roll in. And as we explained last week, the metaphor of the, you know, immovable object versus the unstoppable force being the ambition of Israel to create the Greater Israel Project and not allowing anything to get in the way of that. But the unstoppable force being the economic reality that exists that is unavoidable. It's not a matter of, you know, human policy. And I say that because you have to understand that when Donald Trump goes to Israel and says, hey, you got to stop bombing Lebanon in order to, you know, achieve this, you know, in order to basically not have the world descend into a feedback loop of economic downturns, one after the other, leading the whole world into chaos and eventually starvation. Like, I need your help. It's, you know, it's not like Trump just decided all of a sudden, I'm done with the war in Iran. We're going to close it down. And Israel sitting there like, well, what the hell, Trump? We are in this together. No, it's Trump going, look, I've been pushing this off as long as possible, but we are on the cusp of major feedback loop disaster. This is just the reality, and we have to contend with this, and this has gone on for as long as it can possibly go without entering into the feedback loop. And again, we covered this a month ago when Goldman Sachs put out their projection, and in that case, it was about the European jet fuel supply. And they basically said there's enough jet fuel to continue normal operations until mid-June. Starting in mid-June, the jet fuel supply, the constrictions of the strait have to be opened up, or else what's going to happen? The airlines aren't going to have the jet fuel that they need, so they're going to have to start canceling flights. They're going to have to start, you know, laying people off or furloughing people. They're going to go bankrupt unless they get a big saving package from the government. So, like, once that process starts, once they have to start canceling flights, and once they start losing money, and now you've got to have, I mean, it's inevitable. It's not something Trump chose. It's just reality. It's just what's happening. It's just the economic material that we're working with. And yet still, Israel will give no ground. Still, they will not just go comply with Trump going, look, it's not up to me. The world economy goes down unless we find a way to solve this. And they can't give him that. They can't give him that. So again, I think that's important to understand into how we got here and how we get out of this. Is that Israel is not responding this negatively. You see Mark Levin and all these others criticizing Trump. Trump's support in Israel has cratered utterly. It's gone from like 99% approval to negative 20 approval in about 3 weeks. It's completely unwarranted. And we went over this a lot last week, so we don't need to, you know, reiterate it, but it is the same thing happening over and over and over and over and over again. And as Trump just desperately tries to get them to deal with anything realistically, they simply refuse to. Let's go now to clip number 52 here. This is Trump warning about the economic disaster that, of course, has been readily apparent since before we even went into the war. So why did we do it in the first place, sir? That's the question. Clip 52 now. Let's watch.
Alternative would be a worldwide depression. You know, the stupid people want to have a worldwide depression, and they're stupid people. So you can only go so far. You drive somebody into the ground and a lot of bad things happen. Number one, the strait would never open because they don't like floating billion-dollar ships up and down a strait when there are rockets flying over them and mines all over the place. So the strait would never be open.
Yeah, so there he is. He's just like, it would be a worldwide depression. This is just the reality of the situation. We've pushed this back as far as we can. I mean, he said it there. And of course, the memorandum of understanding, the number one, the first line item in the agreement is the territorial integrity of Lebanon. In response to this, Bibi Netanyahu has, of course, immediately after this happened, he bombed 150 sites in Lebanon, was bragging about it. Again, just flagrantly in the face of Donald Trump. Oh, you don't want us to do this? Guess what we're going to do even more? Even though we don't have to, even though there's no strategic value to, it's a signal. It's a signal letting everybody know they don't give a damn what's best for America or the world for that matter. They're going to do it anyway. And he's made other statements furthering this promise. I'll show you on the other side. I actually translated it myself because he doesn't tend to deliver these types of messages in English. He delivers them in Hebrew. We're figuring out what he says. Stay tuned. It's War Room Live. Follow us on X at AJN Live. Follow at Real Alex Jones. I'm at Harrison H. Smith.
Here's three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026, That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday, limited edition, July 4th. Apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the American 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition, thealexjonesstore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our CMOS. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked. It's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. I congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water, one of the biggest things you can do to take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to, like, sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to, like, a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now, okay? This is... because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, kind of not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it, and I know this is just another big victory. So thank you so much for all you and your support and Bigley knocking it out of the park.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. According to a joint statement from Pakistan and Qatar, the two principal mediators during this round of U.S.-Iran talks in Lucerne, Switzerland, the current round of negotiations has now ended. Per the release, both sides have committed to the formation of a high-level committee that will coordinate working groups focused on nuclear sanctions and a monitoring and dispute resolution group to ensure the effective implementation of the MOU and on other matters. Additionally, a deconfliction group will be formed to coordinate the cessation of hostilities between Israel and Lebanese Hezbollah, a key point of contention between Iran, the U.S., and Israel. So those negotiations continue. Donald Trump has come out on Truth Social and said this: everyone is fully aware that Iran will agree to have major weapons inspections in order to ensure nuclear honesty long into the future. President Donald J. Trump. Again, another sticking point here. And the question is, you know, is this going to be a better nuclear deal than the JCPOA that Barack Obama signed that could have been achieved without, you know, the war, without the war that we fought and frankly kind of, you know, lost in a lot of ways. So again, you've got President Trump trying to get Israel to simply moderate its attacks on Lebanon. Just, hey, can you not bomb civilian apartment buildings for the next couple hours? And of course, that was met with indignation, outrage, and fury. And they decided to kill even more Lebanese people for even less of a reason. Again, we're not going to spend the whole show on this. And we talked about it a lot yesterday as well. Obviously, this is the big news, but there's a lot of other news to get into. Fear not. You know, I do see comments on the chat. It's just like, oh, still talking about Israel. Well, yes. Yes, we are still talking about Israel because we're still talking about the Iran war, the biggest story in the world for the last several years. And yes, Israel is the key component, both starting the war, continuing the war, stopping us from getting out of the war, trying to throw the whole world into economic depression for the sake of their war. Yeah, it's Israel. And yes, we're going to keep talking about it, but not for the whole show. So fear not. Let's go now to clip number 11. This is Bibi Netanyahu in response to the request that he might suspend, or not even suspend, but just, you know, minimize actions in Lebanon. Here's his response. I did this translation by AI. Let's watch.
My instructions and those of the Minister of Defense to the IDF are clear and have not changed. Our fighters in southern Lebanon have full freedom of action to thwart any direct and emerging threat to them or to the residents of the north. The IDF has no restrictions in this regard. I stand behind them, the entire nation stands behind them, and I stand firm that we will remain in the security zone in southern Lebanon for as long as necessary to protect the residents of the north and all its citizens.
And of course, other members of the Israeli government have gone even further. We can go to clip number 30 here. This is Israeli Minister Ben-Gvir talking about what should be done to Lebanon. Again, at least the beginning of this conflict, and even up till now, you just heard it there a little bit, we have to stop the threats to our homeland. They don't even really couch it in that language anymore. It's actually kind of just full-fledged, we are going to conquer this place type language. It's very brazen. I mean, they really are feeling themselves. Well, what's the phrase? What's the phrase the kids do? They're really, you know, feeling very confident in all of this. Here's Israeli Minister Ben-Gvir. He says, see here, I do not accept this restriction that exists on certain areas in the state of Lebanon. Lebanon, all of Lebanon should be our playground. All of Lebanon should be our goal. And I say to myself, wait a minute, but there's Lebanon and there's Hezbollah. I don't accept the artificial approach. Lebanon has a country. There is a name of the Lebanese government. Hezbollah members are ministers on behalf of Hezbollah. They have a revolving door policy. Yeah, because they're citizens, because it's not a state army. It's a citizen militia, and those citizens are in fact allowed to participate in the Lebanese government, something that confuses Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East. He's mogging. The crew just told me the kids would say he's attempting to mog us. Aura mogging is what the kids say. Can we bring up his image? Yeah, there's no aura mogging coming from Ben-Gvir. There's sort of a miasma that follows him around. There's like a poisonous gas that exudes from him. That's not aura, though. That's something else entirely. That's some sort of poisonous gas. And guys, I didn't find the video until just before the show, and I don't even know if I'm going to cover it. At first I saw it and I just rolled my eyes and ignored it. Then I saw it posted over and over. Yuri Geller, who's, you know, a famous fraud psychic guy. He's on Israeli TV, Channel 14, and he's making the claim that Donald Trump is being electromagnetically controlled by Iran using an electromagnetic device. It's very strange, but these are the types of stretches they're going for, the reaches they're making to try to explain why Trump is not slavishly following their every directive anymore. They're like, it must be secret Iranian mind control devices. Okay, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Good point. You know, who knows? Who's to say? Your guess is as good as mine. Let's go now to clip number 39. This is Lindsey Graham, who needs no introduction. Again, just not knowing what time it is or where the world is going at this point. Here's a Lady Graham this weekend talking about what should be done with Iran. Let's watch.
Here's what I think will happen next. If this deal fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz over by force. The United States will control the Strait of Hormuz. We'll charge a fee for all those who go through to pay for the operation. And we're going to expand the Abraham Accords in calendar year 2026. We're going to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords. And which is the biggest change in 5,000 years in the Mideast. And if Iran contests control of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, we will obliterate them. So to all the people listening, if this diplomatic effort fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz. Yep. We're going to run it. We're going to try to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords in the Arab-Israeli conflict in 2026. And if Iran continues to attack Israel and Lebanon, the new policy will be we'll hit Iran. So to the Iranians, if you're listening, when you use Hezbollah to attack Israel, I think the new policy will be we will attack Iran.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, Lindsay. I mean, just literally none of that is gonna happen. I don't know where, who you think you're tricking or if you're being tricked, but none of that is gonna happen. None of that is gonna happen. Let me just say that right out front here. No, that's just not, it's just not gonna happen. I don't even have anything to add to that. It's just like Lindsey Graham's fever dream. You can ignore it, I guess, except that he's got power and he apparently spent like 5 hours with President Trump trying to convince him of this. I can think of a lot better ways for Trump to spend 5 hours on any given day. This, of course, is making the likes of Mark Levin and other Israel First spokesmen apoplectic. They've basically gone insane. But this is where it gets like really weird and crazy and is evidence of a wider plan beyond just the Iran war. It's not only the fact that Netanyahu is clearly trying to sell himself in a weird way. Like Israel politics revolve around America a lot. And it's like who is the best manager who can maintain good relationships with America, but also they don't want to be seen as being controlled by America. So they have like kind of an interesting tightrope to try to walk. And I'm not sure if Netanyahu has the right strategy in all of this. I mean, you've got, as I read last week, former prime ministers of Israel basically being like, we've got to stop Netanyahu. He is going to destroy our entire country. Nobody has done this much damage to Israel, our enemies or friends. Nobody has put us on a worse path than Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll do the Uri Geller clip in just a little bit. But let's go to Netanyahu. I guess let's go to clip 69 here. Let's go to clip 69, because where it gets weird is where you have the elite of Israel calling upon the Jewish diaspora essentially to betray their own countries for the sake of Israel. And this is not a good strategy to pursue. I'm going to let you know that right now. But let's go to Benjamin Netanyahu, where he sort of once again lays out the very, you know, particular mindset of Jewish Israelis as to their role in the world and the loyalty owed to them by everyone of their ethnic persuasion. Let's watch. This is 69. Let's go to 69.
And let me tell you how anti-Semitism works down the ages. Ever since we lost our country and we became defenseless, we were defenseless not only against physical attack, but against the vilifications that often and always preceded them. So we were faced in one country with such vilifications, and that led eventually to either one of two things, either exile or massacre. And then we went to another country and we faced exactly the same thing after the vituperations and vilifications, that we're poisoning the wells, that we drink the blood of slain children, that we carry vermin. And by the way, these are the exact lies that continued right up to the Nazi Holocaust, exactly the lies. So we were faced with these vilifications, and then we were massacred, that we pushed to another country and another country, and the same thing happened over and over and over again. Well, here's where the change happened. It happened with the rise of the State of Israel and the creation of the Israeli army. We may not be able to stop the vilifications. They come and go in a predictable cycle, as my historian father told me. But the change is that when they come to slaughter us, we fight back. We don't let them do that. We fight back and we roll them back, exactly as we have done now in the last 3 years.
And then we'll go to this video here. This is clip 74. And again, you know, there is something distinctly ironic about him bringing up the specter of anti-Semitic claims from the Middle Ages about Jews poisoning wells, when I can literally show you video last week of Israelis poisoning Palestinian wells. I mean, it's one of the many tools they are happy to wield in their toolkit. It's a little ironic. It's a little bit ironic. He's like, these lies about poisoning wells. Meanwhile, the West Bank settlers are like, of course, we poison the wells. Like, trying to drink our water? We put poison in it? It's just a little ironic, I think. A little ironic. But, you know, his history stops a little bit short, doesn't it? He talks about, you know, Jews being vilified, kicked out of a country, going to a different country, being vilified, getting kicked out of that country. And then what? And then what? Because that process stopped for a pretty good long time when Jews especially were welcomed into America, where, sure, maybe 100 years ago there was like very minimal, I wouldn't even call it oppression. It was just like certain law firms didn't hire Jews. Certain neighborhoods had clauses where Jews couldn't buy houses. Like, that was the level. But that hasn't existed for the last 75 years at least. So the question is, what's going to happen here in America? Is this cycle going to continue in America? Because Americans have existed this whole time. I mean, this is one country, maybe the only country in the history of the Jewish people that has not persecuted Jewish people, has never persecuted the Jews, never had that as a aspect of our DNA. And hell, most countries have kicked the Jews out multiple times. I mean, it's kind of a regular occurrence in almost every other country. And that includes England in the 1200s. And I mean, it's every country except for America. Except for America. So why are the Israeli elite and why are the elite in the Jewish diaspora here in America so desperate to tell Jews here in America that the time is up, that this little vacation that the Jews have enjoyed from persecution is over, and now it's time to revert back to the cycle of expulsion, waywardness, settlement, expulsion, waywardness, settlement? Why? Why is that? Was it just all of a sudden? Was it just a dormant disease deep in the European DNA that simply took a while to manifest itself this time? Or is it the actions of the Jews in charge that are deliberately creating this circumstance? And I'm not speculating and I'm asking a rhetorical question. The answer is it's because the elite Jews fabricate, manufacture this situation, which really, again, it's not my overriding concern, but it is first and foremost targeted at the Jewish people themselves to convince them that they're unsafe anywhere and that the only hope they have is to abandon the country in which they've lived for generations, totally free from persecution, to abandon that and seek solace and protection from the elite Jews. I'll show you some videos in just a second. Now let's go to clip 74, where Benjamin Netanyahu himself makes this argument. Let's watch.
But I ask you, the Jews of America and the Jews of the diaspora, to do one thing. Stand up. Don't cower. Don't be afraid. Fight back. Because people will only respect us if we respect ourselves. And when they level lies at us, throw back the truth and do it standing up. Stand up for the truth. Stand up for Israel. Stand up for the Jewish people. Stand up for the Jewish future. Thank you all. Thank you.
So that's Benjamin Netanyahu closing out his speech by asking the Jews of America and the Jews of the diaspora to arise to defend Israel. In other words, sacrifice the generations of American loyalty that you and your family may have expressed and enjoyed, throw that away, throw that into the fire, sacrifice that on the altar of Israel. Give all of that up so Israel can take over Lebanon. That's the choice he's asking American Jews to make. Well, they're not even really asking Jews to make. They're going to create the conditions that force Jews to make that decision. And he's hoping that there's enough psychological programming already seeded into the Jewish population that they will be incapable of, you know, resisting his encouragement. And I think you understand what I mean by that. I mean, literally, they have a huge swath of the Jewish population trained to believe that if they don't show complete and total loyalty to people like Benjamin Netanyahu, then their whole family is going to be killed. I mean, that is what we're working with here. It's a lie, obviously, but it's a lie that could become true if people like Netanyahu get his way. So I want to show a little 2-minute clip from my documentary, The Eighth Front War, and it's at the very end. So this is probably the clip that is least, probably the chunk of the documentary that is least seen, since like every video, there, you know, is a fall off the longer you go in the video. Very rarely do people watch videos to the very end, especially when they're over 10 minutes long like this one. So I thought I'd cut out this portion in particular, because once again, these are billionaires, these are spokespeople, these are like important movers and shakers in the wider Jewish diaspora, including the head of the Tikva Fund that you'll see here, making the case that I just laid out, where he's saying this little vacation, this little, you know, oddity in the history of the Jewish people, it's over now. It's over now. You thought America was a great place where finally your people could be safe and free from persecution, where we have a system set up where people of every race, color, and creed can be heard, be protected by our government. That seemed like a nice situation. But that's over now, is what he's telling you, in no uncertain terms. And once again, I'll just say, this guy's lying to you. This guy's a scumbag. This guy does not have your best interests in mind. And what he's asking you to do is literally commit suicide for him and his people. All right, let's go to this clip. I just had it marked off, but I may have lost it. It's the Eighth Front War. Number 16, here is not the last 2 minutes, but 2 minutes towards the very end of that documentary. You can, of course, find it on my X account. It's pinned to the top at Harrison H. Smith. Please do send this around. Here's the last 2 minutes where you see a bunch of billionaires and community leaders from the Jewish diaspora here in America making the case to their fellow Jews here in America, it's time to abandon America. Let's go. Let's watch.
Beginning already in Q1, hedge funds get set up in Israel, so we become another capital of finance. I'll argue we will beat London within a short decade as a second capital of finance. It's going to be New York as a gateway to America, Hong Kong a gateway to China, Dubai a gateway to Southeast Asia, and Israel as a gateway to other parts of the world.
So we heard earlier about a goal to bring a million immigrants to Israel.
History has proven that when a country starts with allowing anti-Semitism, the results are not kind to that country.
I want to make a warning to somebody else, and that's American Gentiles. The minute your country is taken over by anti-Semitism, the minute you start to be a country that's not blessing Israel but cursing Israel, you have begun the process of shrinking away from your empire.
And you can decide. You can stay here in New York in a declining empire, or you can come to Israel, which is part of the rising middle of the world, which is moving south and east. That's what I encourage you to do.
Our faith in the American project itself has been shaken. The only serious answer to this challenge is to believe again that being Jewish is the most important thing in the world.
When we're kicked out of America and America, you know, the whole thing is done, the whole American Jewish project is done, we're going to be fine.
For decades, American society allowed Jews to live normal lives. This was a pleasant holiday from our destiny. The holiday is over.
The Western culture that stands against the Jews is going down. The West will survive only if it decides to love itself and if it decides to love us, the Jewish people.
The Jewish people are not normal. We never really were.
And now that Israel has turned the entire geopolitical situation on its head, our job in the diaspora is to leverage those wins and win here. Do to our enemies here what Israel did to its enemies there.
And then, of course, you see the hellish landscape of death as a result of what Israel did there, right? Not the most subtle threats, and not even really threats, just them telling us what they're doing, right? That billionaire saying, I think you should abandon the collapsing empire, America, for our rising empire in the Middle East. Like, that's a billionaire hedge fund manager who himself has withdrawn billions of dollars from the American economy and sent it to the Israeli economy. So it's not even like a threat. It's like he's just going, no, we're destroying the American empire. And as, you know, one of those characters in that compilation said, you know, he's like, well, when America collapses, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. We'll be all right. It's like, okay, but you also seem to be the ones orchestrating the collapse. So this doesn't seem like a matter of, hey, we've got our, you know, escape pod here. Maybe the spaceship crashes, but we'll be okay because we'll eject. This is, we're crashing the spaceship, but we have a secret escape pod for ourselves. Nobody else on this ship will escape. Those idiots. That's more the idea I get from them. And again, I think these people are bad. I think these people are bad, and I think they're lying, and I think they feel as though they have a right and ability to orchestrate mass societal movements for their favor. And the number one weapon they utilize in this mission is the trauma-based mind control of the Jewish people to convince you that you are betraying 2,000 years of your ancestors by being loyal to America. I think that's a lie. I think that's a lie and a trick, and I don't think you should listen to them. In fact, I think it's entirely up to the Jewish diaspora itself, themselves, to vocally renounce this and argue against it. Otherwise, you're letting these people speak for you, and you probably shouldn't let these people speak for you. They're not on your side, no matter how much they protest. We'll continue into this on the other side. I do have some videos from the JNS I want to talk about. I'll show you the clip of Geller saying that Donald Trump is being mind controlled by Iran. But I do got to tell you, the AlexJonesStore.com has an incredible sale just kicking off today. It's the start of summer sale, officially live at the AlexJonesStore.com. For the next 2 weeks, we are rolling out a series of major new deals on our best products. Each deal is only going to be available for a limited time. The first sale is on right now. It's methylene blue tincture. You buy one of those, get one absolutely free. Buy the T3 trifecta iodine tincture and get a second one 50% off. These are massive discounts for some of our best-selling products. Still, you get buy one, get one free on methylene blue. Buy one, get one at 50% off for the T3 iodine. Both of these sales end on Wednesday, the 24th of June at midnight. So you only have a couple days. Your arm been hacked off by a homeless person with a samurai sword? Try Shilajit gummies today.
A guy in Venice Beach just got his arm nearly hacked off by some tweaker with a samurai sword. And as of 4:15, he is still on the loose. And seemingly, the reaction from our local government is basically like, oh, shit, like, these things just happen. Like, this is our new normal. That, dude. I want to live in an LA that is safe to go out, where I don't have to worry about walking around and getting my arm hacked off by some tweaker looking for drugs.
Sorry, I ate a Shilajit gummy. Sorry, I thought I could finish it before that clip was over. You caught me. Shilajit gummies, folks. We're not joking. They're very good. Shilajit gummies. Are you a leftist idiot that thinks it's normal that men get their arms chopped off with swords when trying to go to the beach in California? Shilajit gummies are for you. Consumers of Shilajit gummies, they know places to avoid. If you want to avoid having your arm nearly cut off by a sword in Venice Beach, California, you need to be taking Shilajit gummies today. I do love these things. They are really delicious, but they really do give you a kick. And you only get to take one. This is the worst part of Shilajit gummies, is you want to take multiple, but you're only supposed to take one. You can take more if you want. Also, I love the Modern World Survival Stack, a massive discount if you get three products together. It's the Shilajit capsules, the Atomic Defense, and the CMOS capsules, which are packed with vitamins, minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. The Atomic Defense is for daily defense and cellular support, while Shilajit capsules support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. Get one or all of them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Share the links at alexjoneslive.com and on Rumble at thealexjonesstore.com. JonesShowLive.com. Shilajit Gummies.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room Live is on. Let's go ahead and go to this video, because I saw it bopping around the internet right before going live. I haven't even watched it myself yet. I thought it was ridiculous, but then I saw more people posting it. Let's go to clip 83. This is famed, I'm pretty sure famed fraudulent psychic Uri Geller, allegedly, I'll say. But this is the same guy I'm thinking it is. He was very much humiliated by whoever that guy is that would routinely, like, am I wrong? Is Uri Geller, the guy, he used to go on late night shows and he would like make a pencil move with his mind and it amazed everybody. And then, the amazing Randy, I think his name is, right, would go and he would just hold a piece of paper in front of Uri's mouth. Suddenly the pencil wouldn't move because he figured out he was just lightly blowing the pencil and making it spin. Is that Uri Geller? I'm pretty sure that's who it is, right? So here he is on Channel 14, which is closely associated with Benjamin Netanyahu. It's an Israeli channel. Here's what he had to say about what he believes is happening with Donald Trump. He says he changed his position. It's not exactly telepathic powers, but electromagnetic powers. The Russians have it, the Koreans have it, and the Iranians have it. I know it. I know it sounds like I took it from some fictional movie, but it's really what's happening on the job now. They're working with this weapon, and in my opinion, they've injected these waves into the brain. I don't exactly know. It could even be in Russia, where when he was in Russia, it's very easy, even from the routines in Washington. Sorry, China. They hit him in China. They can see this weapon from the routines in Washington. So, Uri, why don't you activate your telepathic weapon, your electromagnetic weapon, to rebalance it? He says, believe it or not, they asked me to do it, and I'm working on it, and I'm working on it. He asked me to share with you where the request came from. Yes, there are things that I can't reveal. I'm sorry, but I cannot reveal the telepathic weaponry we are deploying. It's all very sophisticated. I'm so sorry. He said, do you think this electromagnetic weapon is being wielded on Witkoff? Look, it could be related to finances, Qatar. He says, I'm actually angry. I went on my networks. How can Donald Trump receive a 747 as a gift? Really? Okay. He's getting into other stuff. All right. So that's Uri Geller. Okay, Israeli state-adjacent TV found the explanation for why Trump signed the Iran deal, and it's not the $300 billion reconstruction fund or the gas prices or the 37% approval rating. It's Iranian electromagnetic brainwave weapon. They got him. How did he let his guard down like this? They got him with the Jewish space lasers, only they're not Jewish, and they're not in space. And they might not be lasers. The psychic weapon. I think we have an answer here. I know what you've probably heard from the likes of people like me was that this memorandum of understanding was a necessary step because of the economic reality, the Strait of Hormuz being closed, causing shortages, starting a feedback loop of economic downturn. I know you may be thinking this has to do with something about the Iranian ability to fight back incursions and America and Israel's inability to wield any effective leverage against them. You might think for a moment, if you're an idiot, that there are some real tangible, real world situations that, you know, require appropriate responses. But no. So you're an idiot. They're telling the truth on the Israeli television. It's a psychic weapon that the Chinese hit him with. It's an electromagnetic weapon that they hit Trump with. That totally changed his mind. How did we ever let this happen? Thank God. Thank goodness. We've got Jewish mystic Uri Geller, who's operating his own electromagnetic operation. There's a war going on inside Donald Trump's head.
as multiple factions around the world beam contradictory thoughts into his head in an effort to rescue their country from the abyss. Really incredible stuff. Thank you, Uri Geller, for that very truthful statement.
Thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum has been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL, AlexJonesLive.com. Tell your friends and family, still people out there that don't know that we are still on air, still fighting the fight, as big as ever, because we brought in a bunch of new audience, but still there are people out there that they go to InfoWars.com, they see it's down, and that's it for them. They need to know. They need to be told. You need to do it. Again, I was explaining this before, and my dad was asking me about, like, well, why don't you, like, do a big thing on X? And it's like, well, a lot of people don't have X. A lot of people, like, if they were on X, they'd probably know where to find us. So, seriously, as an act of, you know, community involvement, you can go to all of your older neighbors, say, if you're a fan of Alex Jones, you know he's still on the air, right? AlexJonesLive.com. Of course, support us at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And by the way, I plugged the store earlier. I didn't even mention probably the coolest hat we've ever had on the store. This 1776 hat, I think, is the coolest hat we've ever had. It's a little bit big. It's Alex sized right here. Let me decrease it quite a bit for my smaller brain mass here. I mean, that is a cool hat. That is a very cool hat. That's all I have to say. It's like, you know, when it comes to the supplements, I can tell you about all the cool stuff. Obviously, this is going to be made with the best, you know, material available. It's going to last a long time. It's actually stitched in here. You can actually see the very fine stitching on here. It's not just something ironed on or anything. I mean, this is not going anywhere. But yeah, all I really have to say is look how cool it is. And it's available at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm serious. I genuinely think this is the coolest hat we've ever come out with, hands down. So I'm going to take this one home. Personally, I'm going to take this one home. You can get yours at thealexjonesstore.com. The one that's here is going to disappear from the office mysteriously, and it's going to be in my closet. But you have to go to thealexjonesstore.com to get yours, thealexjonesstore.com. It is a really fantastic hat. I forgot to mention earlier. Okay. With that, let's get back to the videos and the discussion of the MOU and the peace agreement that is forthcoming. We're sure it's coming. I mean, after all, there has been encouraging progress. That's the quote, U.S.-Iran talks. But, you know, tension does remain. U.S.-Iranian officials made encouraging progress at the first round of talks in Switzerland that ended early on Monday, mediators said. Although tension persisted over Lebanon and the Strait of Hormuz, mediators Pakistan and Qatar said the parties had agreed to a roadmap towards a final deal on ending their war in 60 days, despite a tense start as Tehran again shut down the strait and U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to resume attacks on Iran. They said the two sides had agreed to a mechanism to end fighting between U.S. ally Israel and Iran aligned Hezbollah militants in Lebanon. This is all nonsense. They're working out a mechanism to, no, it's just, you just leave. You have to leave now. Israel has to leave Lebanon now. That's the mechanism that's necessary to stop the fighting. It's that you have to stop invading their country and they'll stop fighting you from invading their country. That's the mechanism that needs to be invented, I believe. But of course, a large part of this that's getting a lot of ire from the
Israel first side of things is, of course, the $300 billion price tag that will apparently be tacked onto this. But just like the billions of dollars freed by Barack Obama to Israel, this is not being interpreted the correct way by the wider population. So I do want to go now to clip number 51. We'll start at 2 minutes and 30 seconds in. This is, and I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce this guy's name, but I do like him a lot. Trita Parsi. I believe he was on with Tucker Carlson at one point, but here he is on CNN explaining the reality behind the billions of dollars being opened up as a possibility from this MOU. Let's watch.
Let's continue the conversation now over the past many years.
Absolutely.
I'm curious your perspective on this, though, because CNN had some new reporting that Qatar is looking to get payments to Iran, potentially as much as unfreezing $6 billion in Iranian funds. Even if it isn't the U.S. paying the money effectively, is it effectively paying off Iran to try and get closer to peace?
Well, of course it is, because that's what these freezing of funds were supposed to be. It seems like in Washington, people have forgotten what the actual objective with freezing these funds was. It was to pressure the Iranians to come and negotiate and give nuclear concessions. And if they did so, the money that is theirs would be returned to them. So this is the same criticism that was leveled against the Obama administration. They unfroze a significant amount of Iranian money as part of the JCPOA. Of course, it was phased, and this one will be phased as well. But this is the difference between some people in Washington thinking that the sanctions are there for the sake of just punishing the country indefinitely, and those who recognize that this was supposed to be leverage. And the very point with leverage is that at the right time, you're supposed to lift it in order to get concessions from the other side.
Trita, real quickly, I don't have a ton of time left, but I just wanted to get your perspective on this, because when it comes to this MOU, this Memorandum of Understanding, you wrote this week that, quote, the criticism coming from some Democrats is particularly disappointing because it echoes the same bad faith tactics Republicans deployed against the JCPOA back in 2015. I just wanted your perspective. What did you mean by that, that you're seeing shades of that again?
We're seeing a very knee-jerk reaction by some Democrats, not by all, of course, that is putting forward, frankly, some bad faith critiques of this deal. First of all, we don't know what the final deal is. This is just a memorandum that sets the parameters. There's been a lot of critique against, for instance, the $300 billion reconstruction fund. Forgetting the fact that this is not American money, but rather as part of a final deal in which the Iranians give massive nuclear concessions. The United States would lift sanctions that would enable the Iranians to rebuild their economy. And this is particularly driven by some of Iran's neighbors, the GCC countries, who have recognized the containment and isolation of Iran does not work. It just leads to this disastrous war. And as a result, they want to create economic interdependence with Iran, similarly to what the Europeans did after the Second World War, in order to make sure they never have that war again. And that's the direction the region is going. That's good for the U.S. That would lead to a more stable Middle East. Mm. And to critique that, I think, is one of these bad faith type of attacks that we also saw the Republicans constantly do against the JCPOA 10 or so years ago.
All right. Well, a lot of moving parts. And again, all eyes on Switzerland now for this particular weekend. Trita Parsi, thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thanks so much
afternoon.
For having me.
So again, I think that was an important point. And ever since I heard that, I just keep thinking, well, yeah, that is why sanctions exist, isn't it? They aren't supposed to exist forever. They're supposed to compel behavior. And then you release the sanctions as reward for good behavior. Of course, it gets even more complicated when it's like Iranians have money in banks that we then seize, or crypto wallets that they're able to seize that way. It is their money at the end of the day. We've taken it in order to compel their behavior. But once again, I think, what we're seeing is when the rubber hits the road, all of the rhetoric, all of the sophisticated strategies of monetary manipulation and economic warfare, none of them hold a candle to a gigantic missile flying through the air and landing on your city. That's actually what's driving reality right now. Like, that's reality. That's what you're actually contending with. You can talk about the money. You can talk about you can talk about whatever you want. At the end of the day, if Iran's got missiles and a will to defend itself, you got to deal with them. That's just how it is. So that's the reality that we're currently trying to deal with. And I don't want to spend too much time on any of this, since there really isn't anything substantial to hang our hat on. There's been a bunch of back and forth, kind of confusing nonsense with the Iranian delegation leaving, and actually they didn't leave, and actually, you know, J.D. Vance says we have this understanding where they're only going to be able to spend that $300 billion on American foodstuffs, and Iran comes out and is like, what are you talking about? That was never a part of it. It's all a little bit confusing, so until we have something to actually sink our teeth into in a real, substantial, tangible development here, it's all a lot of the same. Israel and Hezbollah apparently have agreed to a ceasefire starting on Friday, so we have that to look forward to. Israel and Hezbollah have agreed to a ceasefire beginning at 4 p.m. local time on Friday, a senior U.S. official told Reuters. Hezbollah and Israel have agreed to a ceasefire, the official said on background, adding that negotiators with the U.S. and Qataris worked out the deal with help from Iran. We understand that after the exchange of fire earlier today, Israel and Hezbollah are now in a ceasefire. Okay, amazing. What a ceasefire is, we still aren't entirely sure, since the one thing that we know is it's not when you cease firing, according to the people in charge. Now, the irony of all of this is that we've been through this before. And if you watched Moonbase Live last night, we spent basically the entire show just reiterating how point by point we are recreating the situation from 2006, more or less. And that in 2006, you had an attempted invasion of Lebanon by Israel. You had Hezbollah beating them back and it not working. And then what happened after that? What happened after Israel was forced to retreat after 33 days of a pointless but hugely damaging attempted invasion of Lebanon? We invented ISIS is what happened. Did you hear what I just said? See, they tried to invade Lebanon with Israel. America was on board with this. Condoleezza Rice was, you know, managing it. She, of course, just visited the White House a couple weeks ago. She wasn't there to talk about Iran. She was there to talk about the experience that the American government had overseeing and, you know, watching by as Israel, of course, completely failed to achieve this exact goal 20 years ago. Now, 20 years later, we're seeing exactly the same thing occur. Israel has made incursions into Lebanon, but it's not going well. They are losing a lot of men. They have not been able to substantially hamper Hezbollah at all, really, in their ability to release drones or launch rockets. I mean, the evidence that they're not doing well in Lebanon is the fact that an Israeli minister came out last week and said, we should bomb 10 buildings, and he actually said 100 buildings for every drone that Hezbollah shoots towards us. That's because they have no way of dealing with it. That's because they have no ability to stop the drones coming, so they are resorting to terror. They're resorting to, well, if we kill Lebanese people every time they launch a drone, then maybe the Lebanese people will stop Hezbollah from launching drones. That is such an outrageous act of desperation, such a ridiculous strategy for a genuine army to pursue. It's reflective of nothing other than their inability to think of anything else. Any other strategy would be better than terror bombing an attempt to sway the people against Hezbollah. But that's what they're doing, because they have no other choice, because they can't stop the drones. They can't identify where they're coming from. They can't make a sizable dent. They're just blowing up crusader churches and castles out of frustration out of all of this. They say they're not removing themselves from the Beaufort crusader castle that they've taken over. But they also have been incapable of taking this one particular hill that is a Hezbollah fort that they've been trying to take. They've launched 8 different raids on this hill, and every single one of them has been beaten back. And as we were talking about this yesterday, it was like this has already happened really twice, with 2006 being the second time. If it happens a third time, if a third time Israel, with all of the support America gives it, with all of the incredible technology and power that they have, for a third time they're embarrassed by Hezbollah, they have to retreat with their tail between their legs, maybe that's something they just cannot stomach. But the other side of me is like, well, they went through this once in 2006. I think they'll manage it again. I think they'll be okay after this. So what happened in 2006 after Israel failed? All of the sudden, what a coincidence, you had the outbreak of civil war in Syria. You had an attempt to shatter the axis of resistance by arming and funding radicals and separatists inside Syria to break away from Syria. And from this moderate rebel group, you, of course, get the outgrowth of ISIS. which happens to appear at exactly the same locations where our CIA is training the rebels to fight the Syrian civil war. We created ISIS, and that's what Benghazi was all about. Like, this is the thing. You can actually study this stuff extensively and never realize that they're connected. You shouldn't. I mean, you should have the intelligence without even studying it to recognize how these things are interconnected. But part of what the media is engaged in is the deliberate presentation of this stuff as if it's separate. What happened in Libya, what happened with Benghazi, you know, that's a distinct and isolated incident. Meanwhile, and totally separately, you've got the Syrian civil war and the Arab Spring breaking out, and that's totally different and separate than this little kerfuffle that Israel had with Hezbollah. They want you to think of these things as distinct, separate, isolated incidents. When you understand that there is one war that's been waged for the last 30 plus years against Hezbollah, against all of Israel's neighbor, by Israel, using America as the golem carrying out this attack, you realize that none of this is, it's literally all different fronts, different developments in exactly the same conflict. So we took out Muammar Gaddafi in part to open up the floodgates into Europe. Obviously, that was a pre-established, you know, strategy that they would be pursuing. And Gaddafi himself warned Europe, you destroy me, you open up the floodgates of Africa into Europe. That's exactly what happened. But yeah, they took out Gaddafi and then they wanted to use his state weapons and funnel them to the rebels in Syria. That's what the Benghazi raid was all about. That's why they covered it up and claimed it was about some video that was sent. And of course, the real thing to understand is what they were trying to get out of Benghazi were Stinger missiles that could take down potentially commercial airlines. So really the whole Benghazi thing was about getting weapons to ISIS, likely not so that they could be better armed against the Syrian army, but almost certainly so they could try to take down a passenger jet or something equivalent in order to create the wider outrage for America getting into Syria in a full-fledged way, which of course was a major attempt during Trump's first administration when they tried desperately to get him directly involved in the Syrian civil war. And there was that very interesting 24-hour period where, for the first time in his entire political career, they were celebrating Donald Trump and saying what a wonderful president he was because they thought he had finally taken the bait and launched attacks against Syria. But of course, the way that he did it in a very controlled fashion. He warned Syria and Russia that it would be happening to minimize casualties. And it was all a big show that he put on for the benefit of the media pundits themselves, who, of course, were salivating and thought he'd actually gone whole hog. And at the time, like, this is the type of thing that you can watch. You could watch InfoWars at the time. You can watch the Alex Jones Network. You can see we didn't come out and make excuses, say, well, you know, we didn't think, but, you know, Trump is right. We should be going to war with Syria. We didn't fall for it. When he launched the attacks, we said, damn it, you were supposed to be the chosen one. There's video. Alex Jones actually starts crying during it because it was like, this is the greatest betrayal ever. The Iran war was actually the betrayal. Like, that reality didn't come about for another couple of years. But at the time, it was like, what the hell are you doing, Trump? Why would you fall for this? Why would you get into this? Don't you understand they're trying to set you up for another forever war in the Middle East? But then it came out that he'd actually orchestrated it fairly well. He'd basically given the people what they wanted, which was attacking Syria, but in a way that guaranteed it wouldn't spiral out further. And so again, you can see our reaction in real time as we go, damn it, this is bad. This shouldn't have happened. And then go, okay, all right, it looked like he managed it well. It's better than we thought it was going to be. Like, that's the natural reaction to have to all of this. You can look at us and you can look at other people who, no matter what Trump does, they're going to celebrate it and say it's the most genius thing ever. And whether it's, you know, they don't have any actual anything. No, they have no principles. They have no, you know, real moral conviction. It's just wherever the wind blows, we're not like that. We're going to tell you the truth no matter what. And in this case, Donald Trump seems to be doing what he can to minimize Israel without actively making enemies of them. But I think we may be past that. I think it may be time to actively make enemies of them. That'd be one way to handle it. Let's go to, so I got a bunch more videos I want to get to here in this couple of minutes. And weirdly, I'm almost tempted to show you a video of Hillary Clinton commenting on all of this because she actually seems to have a better grasp than a lot of people in the Trump administration who just seem to be lying quite a bit. Let's go to clip 34 here. Clip 35. Let's go to clip 35 because this is J.D. Vance talking about the $300 billion funds being released. Now, as we just heard from Parsi there, you know, this is not a giveaway. It's their money, and it's in return for them doing things that we wanted them to do, which is why we implemented the sanctions in the first place. But then J.D. Vance makes a comment that makes me question all of it, basically. Here it is.
I've seen some misreporting about frozen or unfrozen Iranian assets. One of the other things that we wanted to do, and, you know, wasn't as high of a priority for us for obvious reasons, but we wanted to make sure that we set up a process where if we ever unfreeze Iranian assets, we can ensure that that money, that Iranian money, goes to help the people of Iran and not to fund terrorism. So Jared Kushner actually came up with a very interesting solution with the Qataris, where basically, again, if there is any frozen Iranian assets that are unfrozen, then we have approval over that process. The Qataris have approval over that process. And then the money would actually go to buy American soy, American corn, and American wheat for the benefit of the Iranian people. And as much as I see some of the press misreporting on this, and of course, you know, buttressed by what the Iranians are saying, or not all Iranians, I want to be clear, there are a lot of Iranians who are telling the truth about what happened yesterday, but you see some social media reporting that gets this wrong. But fundamentally, what Jared and the Qataris and the entire team here in Bergenstock accomplished is, to me, a classic Trump deal, where if Iranian assets are ever unfrozen, they're going to go to make American farmers richer and to feed the Iranian people.
So Kushner came up with it? Sorry, the only thing I took away from that was that this was Jared Kushner's plan, which means I'm suspicious of it. Because, again, you look back at, well, interviews with Steve Witkoff, where he references the fact that Jared Kushner and he had been preparing to, you know, establish the Gaza Board of Peace to rule over the ruined Gaza for a year before October 7th even happened. It was a little bit of a slip up. So you got to wonder, I mean, obviously Jared Kushner is a big key player in all of this, and you got to wonder why he's the one putting forward this $300 billion agreement deal. And of course, it was immediately after that speech where I go, okay, that kind of makes sense, though. I mean, if you think about it, okay, we're going to free up this money, but we can sort of dictate where they spend it, and they have to spend it on us. It's better than nothing. Sure, it'd be a $300 billion injection into our economy over time, and it helps rebuild Iran. I see a win-win situation here. And then you have the headline, Tehran disputes Vance claim on nuclear inspections and assets for agricultural funding amid oil license deal. So, is that even true? I don't even know. I cannot tell. I trust J.D. Vance typically, but yeah, he could be wrong in this. I mean, this is the thing. This is what it's like trying to cover this. Where you get a statement from the Vice President of the United States, no uncertain terms, here's the agreement we made, and then immediately after that, you get an article from Iran going, none of that is happening. Okay, great. So what do we do with this information? What is actually happening? I guess we'll wait and see. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But yeah, Tehran disputes Vance claim. Unfreezing assets, divergence in official rhetoric. It's not true that Iran's blocked funds will be used to buy grain, and it is not mentioned in any understanding. Vance said Iran agreed to admit nuclear inspectors, but Iran's state media denied such an agreement was reached. The U.S. issued a 60-day license allowing Iranian oil production and sales as part of the continuing negotiation framework. That, at least, they both seem to agree on. But negotiations continue as we depart Switzerland, and everybody's trying to blame J.D. Vance for this when really it was your fault for getting in the war in the first place. Stay with us. 60 seconds.
There are billions of ways for people to be culturally, spiritually, politically, environmentally engaged. And there are millions and millions of different programs and podcasts and radio shows and things around the world out of the 10 million people on this planet. But on the record, what we've done at InfoWars, and this is just the second leg of that at alexjoneslive.com, has changed the world. Our guests, our callers, our researchers, our reporters, and my overall futuristic analysis and view of the destiny of humanity, which I don't claim to be 100% accurate, but it's definitely proven to be a good template to observe the world has had a giant effect, and the globalists do not like it. So when you share that local AM and FM station that you listen to and tell those you share it with to share it, it changes the world. When you say this is forbidden information at alexjoneslive.com, it has the free audio and video feeds and archives and shows and articles, you are literally going in the face of the censors and the tyrants. You're changing the world. It seems simple. It seems little, but it's not, because we have millions of listeners and viewers. And if we can leverage that out to millions more and have them leverage it out, that creates the chain reaction. And all the great guests and hosts we've had on over the years who are already great, successful, they'll tell you how much more their shows blew up once they were on air here with this operation. We are here to get the next generation, black, white, old, young, to awaken to the epic time that we're all alive in right now and to take action. So your word of mouth is key, your prayer for the broadcast is key, and supporting us financially is so key. And we make it symbiotic, where everything you get at thealexjonesstore.com will empower you, will enrich you, and will be an adventure. The Patriot Apparel, some of the best designs ever, limited edition for the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, are out right now. Right now, ladies and gentlemen. And this latest design, these limited edition, America, red, white, and blue on, you know, Sterling Royal Blue, 76, America 76, 250 years. That is a really cool shirt. I think it's going to be a bestseller. It just came out today. And all the other 250th anniversary limited edition shirts are available right now as well at thealexjonesstore.com. So be sure and check those out. I thank you for your support. But wearing these out in public, meeting like-minded people, spreading the word, it's an adventure in and of itself, and it funds this operation, which is exposing the next pandemic, the next attempted lockdowns, the next big globalist war. You are financing your own future for a better future and better destiny when you keep this broadcast on the air. But you can also experience the InfoWar on the ground wearing these great shirts. Also, we have the new dual carbon platinum gravity fed filter, the highest quality gravity fed carbon filters that are the highest rated, cutting out all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horrible forever chemicals that are out there. And it has the highest quality stainless steel. Nobody has got a filter with better filtration. It's the highest rated, and nobody has as beautiful a filter as this, and ours is way under the price of competitors that are crap. This is the best. It's a home run by Bigley, our sponsor. We're so proud of it. Here's the issue. 1,000 of these came in. It sold out in 3 days. They got a couple thousand more coming in like late next week. Those are pre-order right now. They're going to be sold out soon, and then I'm going to stop promoting it until they get even more in, because I don't like doing pre-order. But if you want to be at the head of the line to get these while you still can, and not have to wait a month or so after that, get your order in now, right now, at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're on the site, check out all the other great Patriot apparel, the super high-quality, military-grade belts, all the great supplements and more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. You know, I have so much more when it comes to Israel. I mean, things are so crazy with that country. It's hard not to spend every show on it. It really, like, the entire show. But I got a lot of other stuff that I want to get to. I'm debating whether we should continue to talk about this, because it's stuff like this. Vance, quote, legitimately worried, Situation Room tapes given to the New York Times. Vice President Vance said on Wednesday he's legitimately worried about audio tapes of conversations from the Situation Room being leaked to journalists in the New York Times. His comments come after a recent report alleged that Vance led the administration's response to fallout from the release of files tied to the disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. A separate report from the Times detailed President Trump's discussions in a series of meetings inside the Situation Room pertaining to U.S. strategy throughout the Iran war. Yeah, that's extremely concerning, that they're leaking Situation Room tapes. Who else are they leaking them? Who else is listening into them? I think we might have a subversion, an infiltration and subversion issue here, when it appears as though the White House itself is infiltrated by people that are more loyal to Israel than they are to America and are willing to commit treason knowing that they won't ever be punished for it, even though, I mean, how many people even have access to the Situation Room tapes? It doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to run down who leaked this, but that investigation will likely never happen or certainly never come to fruition, because it's almost certainly because a, you know, Israeli spy is in the White House. Last time they discovered an Israeli spy in the White House, he was made the ambassador to the UN. So, you know, that type of stuff doesn't really get punished that much. Mike Waltz, of course, was caught communicating with Netanyahu outside of his official role as an American member of the government. He was communicating with and giving tips to and conspiring with a foreign power and giving them advice on how to have the upper hand in negotiations with our president. See, I consider that treason. I don't know what else it would be. Can't imagine what else it would be. It also seems to hint that Mike Waltz could be implicated even more in the Signalgate scandal, and it's probably not the first time he's done this, communicated with foreign nations or, you know, foreign loyal media outlets to try to destroy America's ability to act with our conscience because he believes in Israel and is loyal to Netanyahu. So, like, this is the thing, you know. It's not like they don't know that our White House is infiltrated. It's not like they're confused at this. They're unaware of the fact that Israel routinely spies on our highest levels of government for their own ends and in opposition to our benefit. Are we going to do anything about it? Is anything going to happen? Probably not. So that's how bad the problem is. That's because that's how bad the problem is. You understand? So Vance is legitimately worried about the fact that, yes, some sort of Israeli infiltrator has trying to destroy peace by leaking conversations with the president inside the Situation Room. Then you have stories like this. Israel has seized more land from neighbors since 2023 than it has in decades. Over the past 2.5 years, Israel has taken control of huge swaths of Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria, and amounts to its biggest expansion of military-occupied lands in decades. It's an area larger than many major cities, roughly 1,000 square kilometers. That's 386 square miles, and Israel has said it plans to stay indefinitely. So going back, I'm not even sure I finished my thought in that last segment. But essentially, if you look at what happened in 2006 and you see that when Israel failed to invade Lebanon, the next resort was to get ISIS involved. Well, we're seeing exactly the same thing occur here, where Trump wants al-Shara, al-Jolani, the leader, the former ISIS head chopper who's now president of Syria. He wants him to invade Lebanon from the north. They'll likely have as much success as, well, Israel's having in the south, or ISIS had in the north. And again, we did this on Moonbase, but if you weren't there, you can actually watch the battle maps, right? People make time-lapse animations that show exactly where forces are, where they're moving, where attacks happen. And if you look at the one for the Syrian Civil War, or the time period from about 2006 to about 2015 or so, you can see that the rebel groups of Syria, they first crop up directly on the northern border of Lebanon and were there the entire time trying to go into Lebanon. If you look at the history of ISIS, it's pretty obvious that ISIS likely would have taken control of Syria, would have had a lot more success, and would have probably never been defeated if it weren't for thousands of Hezbollah militiamen going into Syria to fight them. It's the same thing over and over again. So what's going to happen from this juncture, you know, here on out? Likely Israel is not going to do much more in terms of taking over Lebanon or anything else of the sort. Yeah, here you can see the time lapse. And again, that little orange country is Lebanon, sort of surrounded on almost all sides by Syria. And you can see the little pockets of, well, you know, sometimes they're Syrian rebel groups. Sometimes they're ISIS. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell the difference. And I'm not sure if it's this map or another one, but there are ones you can see where they'll have Hezbollah, you know, noted as to what actions they're doing. And you can see they form sort of a protective shield around Lebanon. I mean, that's the purpose of them. That's what they typically do. Anyway, that's going to happen again. So again, they're going to try to get Jolani or Al-Shara to invade if they think they can, if they think that'll work, which I don't think it will, but it might lessen the pressure on the South. So maybe Israel could have some more success. All of this is contingent on the outcome of the negotiations with Iran, obviously, and whether America can actually wield the overwhelming leverage we should have with Israel to get them to stop being so belligerent. It all depends on that. But regardless, it's like Israel is setting itself up for total failure and total collapse, maybe 10 years in the future when their support has reached a minimum and people are getting elected to American politics that are running likely on the sole policy of let's stop supporting Israel. Like, that's going to start happening here in America, and they're going to be screwed. They're going to be completely out of luck. So they have sort of a ticking time bomb with an uncertain explosion date sometime in the future that the fuse is lit. It's going to explode. That's just a fact. They want to take out Iran before that time period. That's probably not going to happen, but they're still going to solidify the gains that they've made so far. They're still going to annex the West Bank. They're still going to create a militarized buffer zone around Gaza and continue to squeeze that population until they can get their Gaza rebuilding Board of Peace project move forward. They have no intention of returning any land to Lebanon whatsoever, or, you know, stopping the attempt to take over all of Lebanon, as Ben-Gvir very eloquently stated. But they are going to solidify their gains in the Golan Heights. They'll solidify their gains possibly up to the Litani River, but maybe not. Either way, they're not retreating. They're not falling back. You know, even as I say this, you know, maybe this is a situation like Germany in World War One, where if you were watching the battle maps of World War One, no foreign forces ever stepped on German soil. Germany expanded during World War One just about everywhere it tried. Nobody ever actually invaded Germany. Everybody was on the defensive the whole time. But then when it came time to sign the Treaty of Versailles, they lost all of those territorial gains and more, and were left significantly diminished as a consequence of that treaty. Maybe something like that will happen with Israel, where, yeah, they're gaining land, yeah, they're conquering places or taking ownership of places that are still to this day and always previously had been denoted by the UN to be, you know, an illegal international occupation. They're basically annexing those areas. Israel thinks in terms of generations. They don't necessarily plan for what's going to happen, you know, a year later. America, we're constantly stuck in the cycle of what's going to get us to the next election, what's going to get us to the next quarter. How do we just improve this stat immediately so that we can, you know, weather this particular storm? For the Israelis, it's like, well, they got the expansion that they wanted in certain places. Maybe they didn't get Iran, but, you know, I think they're feeling pretty confident in their ability to sort of never contract, but, you know, calm down a little bit. After all, again, we saw this before. It took them 20 years to build up goodwill and, you know, confidence to try this again. It may be another 20 years before we see another big explosion of conflict in the Middle East, but certainly in the term of a century-long timetable, Israel has made some major tangible developments and expansions in just this little, you know, conflict here. In fact, I think I have some good videos about this, but I got so much other stuff to cover. Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote this: our strategic petroleum reserves are historically low, sitting at approximately 340 million barrels. Our strategic petroleum reserve has not been this low since 1983. The U.S. uses between 20 to 23 million barrels of oil per day. Our SPR is extremely low because Trump released 172 million barrels of oil because of his Iran war, and Biden released 180 million barrels of oil in 2022 because of the Ukraine-Russia war. If America has so much oil, why are Americans paying the price of wars we don't support? Because it's all for Israel, obviously. So Israel is having some success in terms of territorial expansion. It's just at what cost is the question. Mark Levin flying to Israel as Netanyahu reportedly seeks to leverage Levin to trash Trump's Iran deal. And of course, there's, you know, all these headlines about how, you know, Netanyahu is just clearly going to try to scuttle and destroy any diplomatic ability Trump has to negotiate with Iran. And Netanyahu himself comes out. I got a video of him thanking Mark Levin by name, as well as other American patriots that are doing his job to try to convince Trump to stay in the war. Again, these people are all just traitors. It's not nothing really that complicated about it. A renowned Lebanese sea turtle conservationist was killed by the IDF in an attack near Tyre. Mona Khalil was a 76-year-old Lebanese environmental activist and sea turtle conservationist. She died over the weekend from wounds sustained in an Israeli strike on her home 2 weeks ago in southern Lebanon near the city of Tyre, according to environmental activists and media reports. One of Khalil's assistants was also seriously wounded in the attack. The IDF said it had no record of an attack at the coordinates provided on June 5th, the day Khalil was wounded. The IDF always acts in accordance with international law and works to minimize harm to uninvolved individuals, it says. Again, I don't even know why. Why do you feel the need to publish such hilarious lies? That's crazy. That's a crazy thing to say. Al Jazeera reported that Khalil came from a Lebanese family that had once lived in Nigeria. She was born in 1949, lived for many years in the Netherlands, and returned to Lebanon to live in a house that her family owned next to the Al-Mansouri beach south of Tyre. So again, you know, it's like, how do people justify this in terms of the lies that Israel says about, oh, we're killing Hamas or we're killing Hezbollah? And where we work so hard to minimize civilian casualties. And it's like, really? Because you've killed hundreds of aid workers and God only knows how many. I mean, I've seen probably hundreds of memorials to like the Christian priest and his family slaughtered by Israel, churches destroyed. In fact, there's video we have of Israel desecrating another church in southern Lebanon, clip 28 here. After all, one of their first incursions into Lebanon this round, you know, they smashed the statue of the Virgin Mary, and it was very embarrassing for Israel since they're at the same time trying to convince everybody that Israel is a good place for Christians. Well, here you can see the IDF got into this church and smashed all of the statues because, you know, they're driven by hatred of Christianity just as much as hatred of Islam. So again, how do Americans justify this? How do Americans, you know, believe that Israel is the champion of the Christians, but occasionally desecrate churches whenever they get a chance and blew up the Crusader fort that had been there for 1400 years, saying they're so careful not to kill any civilians, but it's like every civilian in Lebanon is being murdered. How do you justify this? You can't. I mean, you just have to believe lies. That's the only possible way. Israel and defense experts says America needs another Pearl Harbor or 9/11 to remember who's the enemy and who's the friend. I don't think that's going to convince anybody. Dude, I think it's a whole different world than it was 26 years ago when they did 9/11 for exactly the same reason with exactly the same purpose. I don't think anybody's going to buy it. And at this point, I mean, I understand, you know, the low IQ anti-Semitism stuff can be very damaging to an actual genuine attempt to stop the evil in the world, regardless of who it's coming from or where it's coming from. I understand why you'd not want to be making claims like this without sufficient proof, but we have more than enough proof for how Israel was involved in the attacks on 9/11. I just don't think this is going to work. In a word, I don't think this is going to work. I've said before, I think the only thing that could possibly work would be an attack of such monumental and devastating scale that like it literally just terrifies absolutely everybody into obeying because they think they're going to die if they don't. Like something of that level. If you have nukes going off in multiple cities around the country all in the same day, everybody's just going to fall into line. Like at that point, something of that scale. But even then, I think people are going to be like, damn it, this is, this is Israel. And again, you know, there were several instances over this weekend of churches burning. One in New York, there was one in, or actually I wasn't sure. I think maybe the same one was mislabeled. Somebody said it was New Brunswick, a church in New Brunswick, but I think it was Bushwick Avenue. There was a church on Bushwick Avenue in New York that burned. And the top comment I saw underneath it was, this is Israel. It looks like Mossad has really upped its attacks. I don't think that was Mossad. I genuinely don't. I think most of the church burnings that we see at an ever-increasing rate are the consequence of purposeful arson attacks from people on the left, from Islamists mostly, since most of them are happening in Europe. It could be a Jewish radical that did this, but like that's the mindset of a lot of Americans right now is, oh, something bad happened, Israel's at it again. Again, I don't think that's necessarily a healthy way to approach things, because you're just discrediting the actual claims you have if you just claim every fire ever set in America must be Mossad pulling off a false flag. Like, that's very low IQ anti-Semitism. That's not helpful to anybody. But it is a litmus test. But it is a little bit of a sign of the times and what people are thinking and where they're placing their outrage. You know, it's kind of like the Charlie Kirk assassination. I always said from the very beginning, I don't know what, if any, role Israel had in the Charlie Kirk assassination, but there's really only one of two options. Either I accidentally foiled a Israeli false flag by simply, you know, posting a rumor I'd heard a couple weeks before the assassination actually occurred. Like, either it was Israel and they didn't even get close to getting away with it, we caught them, you know, red-handed, pants down, the moment it happened. Or maybe Israel got blamed for the one assassination they didn't actually carry out. I don't know which one it is, and I'm kind of fine with either. So it's kind of like, okay, I don't think Israel necessarily burned that church, but I'm also not entirely unhappy with them getting the blame. It's also not the worst people to blame, since there's a pattern of behavior there. But again, I don't know if a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor attack would work when at least half the country literally blames you for everything when there's not any evidence. I think by talking about it, by going, you know, America needs another 9/11, America needs another Pearl Harbor, it's like, do you know what you're doing? All you're doing by making this statement is stacking up the evidence for the eventual attack that everybody is going to assume Israel carried out, because, you know, you keep talking about it. You keep saying that you're going to do it, or that somebody should do it, or you're just predicting that it's going to happen. Yeah, I think we know the unspoken here. Israel's ambassador Mike Huckabee said he feels safer in Tel Aviv than the USA. Jokes he'd checked Trump's Truth Social to see if he'd been fired amid the Netanyahu beef. Very funny. Very funny stuff from Mike Huckabee. Crazy. Now I want to read this because I think this is very true, and this goes into everything that we're talking about. Well, before I do that, here's another example of what I consider a pretty crazy watershed moment. I actually covered it on my Off Limits news show more, although I guess I covered it on War Room as well. It's the whole story that happened last week with Joe Lonsdale and this kid who said, I don't want to work for Jews, and Gabe Einhorn. The Gateway Pundit, typically when it comes to American politics, is one of my favorite outlets. And for a very long time, before October 7th, it was very much my go-to. In the morning, I'd open Infowars.com. Now I open AlexJonesLive.com, open Gateway Pundit. But it's one of these things where they can be right about 99% of everything, and then any time Israel gets mentioned, they just are just abjectly wrong. It's one of these situations, one of these instances, where it's like, this can't be natural. Because they so clearly can see the truth with everything, but then when it's Israel, they just buy every lie, hook, line, and sinker. And it's like kind of embarrassing. It's like, you can see through the deep state, you can see through the manipulations that have attacked America for so long. You can see through all of that, but you still think Hamas beheaded 40 babies. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. Gateway Pundit is one of these articles. So Imagine my shock when there was a headline called Tech Demigods Target a Teenager. Is this MAGA now? Is this MAGA now? Be a strong Jew, he commanded the 24-year-old founder. And that is the missed opportunity. A Cornell student turned down a job interview with an ignorant and stupid line about not wanting to work for a Jewish founder. Nobody has to defend it. The kid is not the story. The opportunity is the story. The founder, Gabe Einhorn, blacked out the student's name before posting it. Then billionaire Joe Lonsdale, Peter Thiel's partner and one of the world's most powerful men, stepped in and told him he was weak for not naming the kid. So the fact that Gateway Pundit is explicitly calling out the behavior of the Jewish elite in their very ill-advised attack on American freedoms. Again, I don't think you have the domination that you think you do. I don't think Israel can get away with what it thinks it can get away with. And so when it comes to, you know, the panic that Israel is feeling right now, as their gamble is not paid off, as the war they started has turned on them, and now they're calling out to the Jewish diaspora, and specifically Jews here in America, to turn on America and join them in their attempt to destroy America and to make off with our wealth to the Middle East, as laid out in the video that we showed earlier. I think this is a fantastic summation of all this. Hopefully I can get through it before the break ends. This is from JD at Lost My Hats on X. He says, so what you see in the latest clip of Prime Minister Netanyahu is him telling Jews to fight their own government, their own country, their own neighbors on behalf of a foreign nation to whom he candidly tells them they owe their greatest loyalty. The entire Zionist project was permitted by Western nations because we were told Jews needed a safe space, a sanctuary where they could be safe. Western nations bought into the Zionist project because they were sick and tired of Jewish people causing civil unrest as Jewish values conflicted with Western Christian values and permitted their own body politic could finally relieve the West of that clash of cultures. 80 years later, and Israel is the least safe place for Jews on earth. 80 years later, Jews are still being told to assert their will over the will of their host countries and to fight their neighbors. 80 years later, and Jews still refuse to go live in Israel, supposedly their ancestral homeland, where they have deep metaphysical connections, and instead remain spread worldwide instead of going to live in the homeland that's so important to their identity. If anti-Semitism is such a problem worldwide, why hasn't the diaspora moved to their sanctuary nation yet? Why fight anti-Semitism when you can just migrate to a safe space? It's because Israel was never what they told us it was for. Israel is a power-laundering international outpost that allows them to maintain state-sponsored violence, a base of operations for sanction-free rulemaking, a place where criminals can escape extradition, and the diaspora serves as a native lobbying operation for the benefit of the Israeli state. Again, we're going to continue through this, but I genuinely hope Jews in America can see through how the powers that be are trying to use them to create the division and the strife and the chaos that serves only them.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me.
I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. All right, well, I got to move on. I mean, the ADL is calling goy slop anti-Semitism. The term goy slop, anti-Semitism. Okay. So we've gotten to a point where I think we're done. I think we're done talking about all this. I'll just finish out again with this post from at Lost My Hats, JD on X. He says, if anti-Semitism is such a big deal, you know, well, why aren't you in Israel? There's no anti-Semitism there, right? Well, it's because Israel was never what they told us it was for. Israel is a power-laundering international outpost that allows them to maintain state-sponsored violence, a base of operations for sanctions-free rulemaking, a place where criminals can escape extradition, and the diaspora serves as a native lobbying operation for the benefit of the Israeli state. If Jews worldwide actually treated Israel like a homeland and not a corporate headquarters, we wouldn't have the Jewish-related conflict ripping apart nations like the U.S. at the seams. It's time to be done first. With the Zionist project, because it's failed its intended purpose, or for Jews worldwide to commit to their alleged homeland and move there and escape all the anti-Semitism they're subjected to in the West, so they don't have to be worked up by the Israeli PM to fight their host nations. They have a right to return. Return already! Which, again, as you look at Benjamin Netanyahu invoking the specter of, you know, Jewish expulsions throughout history, it's like you gotta wonder, is this how they happen? Like, there was no problem with Jews in America. There never has been. There isn't now, to this day. There is no official or unofficial discrimination against Jews. You're not permitted from worshiping the way you want, or, I mean, and honestly, maybe a little bit too much freedom with certain Jewish communities, like the ones that we've seen in New Jersey taking over towns and bankrupting the education program while sending all of their kids to taxpayer-funded private schools. Like, yeah, I mean, there's no problem here. There's no oppression. There's no unfair taxation. There's no blood libels and peasants with pitchforks driving you out of town. That's never existed in America. It never would exist in America, but now they're trying to deliberately create that situation in America. And it does have a tendency to start propelling itself, to institute the feedback loop where they say this is anti-Semitism, you're all anti-Semites. We say, well, no, we're not. We just don't want to do this one thing. And then the Jews say to their Jewish American cohorts, hey, these Americans are going to turn on you. We better get out of here quick. We're like, so wait, you're bankrupting us? So wait, you're taking all of your money out and going to a different country? So are you not loyal to America? This is kind of a problem. They're like, see, the anti-Semitism says we're not loyal to America. It's this very dangerous feedback loop. So while, you know, the article, the post I just read, I think is factually valid, and I think his sentiment is probably one shared by a lot of people getting sick and tired of the likes of Benjamin Netanyahu extolling our fellow Americans to rebel against us, like that's unacceptable and there's no reason why we should be okay with that whatsoever. I think it's up to the Jews, and, you know, maybe this would be a good time to rehash something I've done before. I intended to do it a couple weeks ago because there was another instance like this. Basically pulling up pages from AIPAC or the ADL or the SPLC because they've written a lot of articles that are telling white people how to accept, you know, their displacement or how to accept people hating them and talking bad about them. And, you know, maybe we need to rehash that where they go, you know, white people can get very uncomfortable when the topic of race comes up. But, you know, it's up to white people. You've got to have the courage and the, you know, goodwill to discuss this. It's going to be some painful conversations. That's actually true for Jews in this country. It's like, no, y'all need to have some very serious conversations with yourselves and determine what path you want to take, because it's Benjamin Netanyahu and it's Israel and it's the self-appointed spokespeople for the Jewish diaspora, like Mark Levin on the right or Jonathan Greenblatt on the left. They're the ones that are creating this hostile atmosphere. You can reject them outright. You can expel them from your coalition. You can stand up and declare that they do not represent you and you are not on their side. But until you do that, it is what it is.
Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on Tri-Iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat. High quality. With a nice leather patch made in the USA, just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, the concept. 1776, Redneck Deluxe. And that is good stuff with the two crossed musket rifles. That is a good-looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
All right, folks, we're done. We're done. All right? We're done talking about Israel this episode. As much as I can. As much as I can be. We're done talking about Israel. We're moving on. We got a bunch of other hilarious nonsense to talk about. And just sheer insanity. I mean, there's so much. There's so much craziness. Like, the fact that the reflecting pool outside the Lincoln Memorial has become like a battleground. Every day, there's multiple videos. We now have plainclothes and uniformed National Guard members standing guard around the Lincoln reflecting pool because leftists can't help that they're attacking it. They're tearing up the sealant to try to ruin the fountain just so they can get one over on Donald Trump. And it's just, it is maybe the most idiocracy, the most glaring example of how this country is just unbelievably screwed. Because what the hell? What the hell are we doing here, guys? And then there's like so many different aspects to it, because we could get into, because not only could we get into the weird leftist obsession with this pool where you literally have people like risking jail time just to go tear up some sealant in the Lincoln Memorial. It's genuinely crazy. On the face of it, that alone would be enough to be like, we have a serious problem here. What the hell is going on? But then you actually look into like what's going on with the reflecting pool, and it's like, okay, there's a lot of incompetence going on here too. The Trump administration filled up this pool from water from the Potomac, which has the algae in it, which caused the bloom. Then they're pouring hydrogen peroxide to try to kill the algae, but the hydrogen peroxide is making the like paint peel up. And it's just like, okay, so first you have the insane, inexplicable incompetence where we cannot even get a fountain repaired. But that's made so much more difficult by things like this. What was that headline? Bring that back up. Former U.S. Olympian arrested for vandalizing reflecting pool. Trump admin warns defilers will be prosecuted to the fullest extent. A 67-year-old three-time Olympic canoeist was vandalizing the reflecting pool. But why, though? But what is the point of this? So, again, you know, it's just stuff like that. And then on top of that, you go, okay, the mainstream media has run 300 stories about this reflecting pool in the same time period that it was revealed by Tulsi Gabbard, the ODNI, that Anthony Fauci deliberately covered up the lab origin leak of the virus, resulting in potentially the deaths of millions of people. So the mainstream media has not once covered that revelation. Not a single mainstream media channel, newspaper, nothing. None of them have come out to report on the fact that Anthony Fauci is in fact a supervillain that actually created the virus that destroyed the world. Like, you would think that would be a big news story, but it's been completely ignored, and instead they are daily sending out entire investigative teams to try to get to the bottom of what's causing the algae in the reflecting pond. So you see what I mean by, like, layers of absurdity. But, like, how do I even cover this story? Do I talk about the mainstream media insanity of how much attention they're putting on this story? The fact that the left is so psychologically damaged that they will literally attack fish. They'll attack water. They're just so desperate for anything that makes Trump look bad at all. Or do you talk about the incompetence of the Trump administration, where apparently they gave some like $20 million contract to one of Trump's friends to manage the fountain, and he's apparently totally failed? Which angle do you want to take on this? Because they're all bad. They're all bad. Liz Churchill noted, these six major media outlets have refused to report on DNI Tulsi Gabbard's declassification that proves Dr. Fauci's cover-up of the COVID pandemic. ABC News, CNN, CBS News, NBC, MSNBC, New York Times, not one of these major outlets has reported on the declassification of those files. Do you know why? Do you know why they haven't reported on this? Because they don't want action to come from it. You know what they would report on? There would be headlines on every single one of those outlets if Anthony Fauci was arrested. If the revelation of the evidence of Anthony Fauci, you know, committing treason and conspiring with foreigners to release a virus to kill millions of people and then lock us down on the basis of the lies that he told about it, if he was arrested, they'd cover it. They don't want him arrested, so they're not covering it. This is the equation that actually determines whether or not the media covers something. It's, do they want to use it to achieve a political end? If they wanted Anthony Fauci arrested, they would cover this, obviously. The way it works is you have somebody in a position of power, whether it's at a NGO or in the government, they might come out with a study or they might release this type of information. Like, the way this would go normally, Tulsi Gabbard releases this bombshell report. Then, if the media functioned properly or if they wanted this to happen, then the media would pick it up and they'd go, look at this outrage, look at this criminality, look at this insanity that they've saddled us with.
Levin,
he's back! He's back, everyone!
You don't think your little podcast is gonna save you? Shut up, you stupid American!
We've moved on, Alex.
There's gonna be a new 9/11 soon and you'll learn to lick our boots. Just wanna let you know I'm watching.
Mark Levin is watching. But I swore we'd move on. I swore we'd move on from the Israeli topic. Even I can only take so much of this.
Stop covering up for Israel! 100%! And it's not enough you do 3 hours a day. You do your moon base, other 3 hours. I want 24 hours a day attacking Israel, or you work for them. I have the high and mighty. Say you love Hitler!
Yes, sir.
We don't love Hitler. It's a joke. but we don't have Hitler around anymore. We have instead, come on, die for Israel.
Well, Mark Levin.
I think we moved on. Actually Hitler's penis.
Oh.
They cloned Hitler's penis, put into a pig. Oh, actual real...
They got us. This is us behind the scenes. We have to tuck our curls up every time we go live.
It's actually true.
It's a pretty good edit. I don't know who did that, but it looks very good.
Man, I'm not that wrinkly yet, though. Jesus Christ, dude.
See, but if we looked like that, can you imagine what we could say and get away with it? It'd be great. We could say whatever we wanted. We could call for...
Yeah, you know, out of all the Hasidic Jews, they have 100 different... They all fight with each other.
That's true.
Like, I saw this anti-Israel video, and it's like, Stalin was with the Jews, and, no, Stalin sat there and played possum with Trotsky and Lenin, and then he killed both of them over, you know, first Lenin, then he was a hero over there. So I, like, see these videos that have a little bit of history, but they don't have the whole thing. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know if you saw us.
There you go.
I was talking earlier about, you know.
Is that Mark Levin approved?
Does Mark Levin appreciate this? It looks pretty good. I think you could rock it all the time. I don't think this needs to be a novelty. I think it's a good look.
Well, have you seen when they morph me over Hitler?
It does. You do have, I mean, the German elements come out for sure. I'm done. I'm done talking about Israel.
Back on Israel now. You know, the Nazis are so funny, though. Back when I used to, like, have Nick Fuentes on the show, and then I would come in and say, I was supposed to be part of the show, and I'd come in and say, don't cover Israel. The people thought that was real. It's like, it's a joke, dummies.
I know.
But those guys know that. I'm telling you, what I'm saying is, the low IQ anti-Semites, it's a real thing.
Yeah, it is. I was saying today, I saw somebody, a church was on fire, and it was people going, we know this is Mossad, we know this is Israel, and it's like, guys, they do a lot. They aren't responsible for literally everything.
Yeah.
That's you're completely off the mark.
Girl, look, I like this light on for you. Why don't you turn it off?
It's the glasses. It reflects on the glasses.
No, more psychotic. Come on.
You like it?
How do you turn this on?
Don't tell him.
Get in there.
No, it's too bright.
No.
The audience doesn't like it.
They're too close.
They made me promise.
Ah, fire weapons. Ah, I'm going
to
keep doing this.
He's trying to turn on the eye light. It's too bright. It's too bright. Oh, they're showing him. Don't. Why? No. No, I like the darkness. Let me be in the dark. Well, what can I say? Oh, wait, you're blocking me.
Let me see what it looks like. Come on.
I'm telling you, it's the reflection's too much.
Get your head. Don't stop. Let me see.
Look, you see? I'm glowing. I don't know. See, it's the glasses. You don't find that distracting?
No, you're right. It's not good.
It's not good. I think I look better without it.
Oh, go back to him.
That's right. Whenever I wear contacts, we'll turn it on.
I'm crushing your head. Crushing your head. Mark Levin here. I'm crushing your head.
This is what Israel doesn't want out. This is what they really... This is why we're such a danger to them. Can y'all even hear him? He's not even mic'd. It's just me talking to myself at this point. No, we're done. We're done. I mean, we could keep... if we want to keep talking about Israel, I have literally more stacks that we could go through. It could be endless. It could be an endless report. They left the eye light on, by the way. Now the eye light is still on. And the reflection is terrible. Oh, no,
he's attack Israel!
Oh, no. Oh, crap.
Attack Israel! Attack them! Hail Hitler!
Look, somebody got into the Shilajit gummies. That's all I'm saying. Somebody's overdosing on Shilajit around here. It's not me. Couldn't be me. What were we even talking about? What was I getting into? Oh, that nobody's talking about Anthony Fauci because we didn't arrest him. Because nothing's actually happened yet. But that's the way it works, folks. If they wanted something to happen, then they would report it. It would become a phenomenon. Everybody out there, it would be the same headline on everything. Anthony Fauci exposed. We demand judgment. They would be asked, because then what happens is then they bring on politicians to ask them about the big story that they're all covering. And that's the way that they pressure the politicians. And they say, hey, you know, this is a really big deal. You know, you might not get reelected if you don't do something about this. What are we going to do about this? And then the politicians are on the spot and they're making promises. And then they have to go back and say, hey, I just was on air promising to get to the bottom of this. What are we going to do to get to the bottom of it? This is what, and so again, you have to understand the mainstream media, their entire purpose is creating narratives, is creating the illusion of trends or phenomenons. Again, you know, I can find more examples, but the classic example is George Floyd, is you get one guy dying in police custody. It's a brutal video, which helps it go viral, but that gets extrapolated out toward the mainstream media in a chorus all at once, ubiquitously. Not a single outlet, you know, not doing the same thing, not participating in this, where they all say this is a, you know, trend. This is a genocide going on, and we've got to do whatever it takes to stop this constant barrage of young, innocent black men being murdered by the police. Doesn't exist, has never existed, but they create it from whole cloth, and they could do that with Anthony Fauci. They're not doing it with Anthony Fauci because they don't want to. Because they're protecting him, because just like they have the ability to create the narratives, they have the ability to destroy them as well. That's why it's not that complicated. This is another wild story from this. I love this. So in Oregon, the governor is celebrating. She's had a major success here, major achievement. overdose deaths have dropped by nearly 40% in 2 years. Well, that's huge. That's an accomplishment, right? Only they're only reversing their own policy and trying to mitigate the bad effects of their own policy. So step one was to essentially legalize all drugs so the overdose deaths skyrocket through the roof. Step two is you criminalize illicit drugs again. You go back to what they were before, overdose deaths dropped by half, and then you come out and celebrate it, taking credit only for the reversal of the thing you did in the first place. Crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, no, they're literally like, we've had major success. Oh, really? In a diametric, you know, betrayal of your own beliefs? Because what you thought would happen, actually the opposite happened. You thought somehow overdose deaths would go down and crime would go down if you just let criminals do their drugs in the open air. That totally backfired, obviously. That predictably led to many more overdose deaths. But instead of admitting that you were wrong, you now want to take credit for going back to the way things were. It's kind of a Strait of Hormuz style operation, actually, if you think about it. We got back to where we were before the war began, and we're supposed to celebrate that like it's a victory. Actually, you got back to where you were, slightly worse than where you were. Not quite back to where you were, totally. And there's so many stories like this. Like, these are the types of stories I generally don't cover because we have so much to cover Israel and everything else, but you gotta love this. New York Times published 4 pieces about fatherhood on Father's Day. The authors of these pieces were 3 women, a trans man, and 2 childless men. Not one father. The cultural contempt for dads runs so deep, we don't even get to speak for ourselves. And he goes on, this is Alex Berenson, who's right occasionally about stuff like this, but wrong about most things. I want to congratulate New York Times for perfectly catching how the cultural elite view men and fatherhood this Father's Day. Yes, to the Times, being a dad is something you do to feel better about having your tits cut off. Cannot make it up. And it's literally these like cartoons when it's like, Dad, how long were you a girl? And it's just like, is this what fatherhood is about? It's about being a mother, cross-dress. It's about cross-dressing mother. Great. Great. No, it's wonderful. There's some disturbing stuff, too. It's like, how do you go from something that silly to something? This is the way, again, the mainstream media works. While we're on the topic of creating narratives from absolutely nothing and then inspiring a bunch of action on the basis of those fake narratives. And this has gone around for a while, but it's worth it to revisit it. It's a post from 2 posts from Reddit. The first on the world news subcategory says renewed calls for Catholic Church apology after mass grave of indigenous children found in Canada. Oh my God. 68,000 upvotes, right? Stayed on top of the page forever, on top of the site forever. This claim, this headline. That includes everything, right? Mass grave, indigenous people, and children, right? So this is designed to get attention. It's designed to express one thought above all others, which is the Catholic Church, white people in Canada, murdered endless indigenous children, probably for no reason, probably just for fun, but certainly covered it up, and we haven't even heard about it. That's how evil they are. Meanwhile, the follow-up to this, no human remains found 2 years after claims of mass graves in Canada. It gets no upvotes because it gets removed from the category. So this is the mainstream media in a nutshell. A blatant, abject, ridiculous lie about the Catholic Church having mass graves. No mass graves were ever found. They sponsored tens of millions of dollars worth of ground-penetrating radar scans, LIDAR scans, whatever they could do to try to prove that there was at least one grave on one residential school. They never found a single ounce of human remains. They never found a grave. They never found a graveyard. They never found mass graves. They never found dead children. They never found skeletons. They found nothing. And yet, it is illegal in Canada to question the veracity of the claims about the residential school genocide. Thanks in no small part to the media campaign that spread this lie with no proof. There was never any evidence. How could there be? It didn't exist. It didn't exist. And this is what it's like being a conspiracy theorist. This is what it's like being aware, being in tune with this stuff, actually knowing the truth, is I literally have to sit here and report on essentially what amounts to giant protests, giant nationwide activist movement, you know, phenomenons about Bigfoot, right? Something that just doesn't exist. Man, that's not the best example because that might exist. Actually, it's not even a good example because there's a better chance that Bigfoot exists than the residential genocide exists. I need something faker than Bigfoot because there's actually theoretically pictures of Bigfoot. I mean, there's more proof for Bigfoot than there is for the residential school in Canada. So actually, it's even worse than that. It's something they literally made up from whole cloth. So it's not just that you have thousands of people storming the Capitol in Canada and tearing down the statue of Queen Victoria and burning down 120 churches in Canada as a direct response to this lie. It's like, imagine it was all these people on the street committing violence, risking jail time, screaming until their faces red, passing laws to stop you from questioning Bigfoot's older brother, Jeff, who has a jet ski, right? Something even less likely than Bigfoot. Bigfoot who does water sports or something. I can't think of something less real than the residential school genocide. So how am I supposed to go on like this? I got to report on stuff that doesn't exist and yet people are tearing down statues and burning down churches over it, and it's illegal to question it. And then when the truth gets posted, it not only doesn't do quite as well as the original story, it gets removed immediately because it contradicts the narrative, because it has nothing to do with the truth, what these people believe and what they base their policy on. We are literally being controlled by the paranoid nightmares of these psychotic idiots. There's nothing real. Nothing really happened. There's no real damage being done. There's no real enemy being fought. These are a bunch of Bigfoot hunters who have control of our government and are basing their decisions and writing laws on the basis of Sasquatch's cool older brother, Jeff, who knows how to do a kickflip. It doesn't exist, and it never has. But for some reason, huge swaths of the world, including probably the majority of people in our country and Canada, if you were to ask them, have you heard of the residential schools? If they'd even heard of it, they'd say, oh, yeah, it was that fact that the Catholic school murdered a bunch of indigenous children in Canada. I totally heard about that. This image is significantly more valid, is significantly more legitimate. It would make more sense to write laws on the basis of this photo being a real life picture of the Pacific Northwest mountain ape than just a dude in a costume. At least they put a dude in a costume. At least there's a picture of it. That is evidence. I mean, whether it's real evidence, whether it's fake evidence, I mean, that is more evidence than they have for the residential school. Far more. And that just goes to show you how lazy the false flags are now. They couldn't find a couple kids' skeletons to go bury somewhere to false flag us. They don't have to. They don't need to. Do you understand what I'm saying? If they wanted to actually create a hoax of the residential school, they could do a little extra work. They could dig a couple holes. And even if there's nothing in it, they could go, well, our LIDAR scan shows that grave-sized holes were found. They don't even do that. They didn't even put the work in that the original Bigfoot hoaxers put in. They actually bought a costume. They actually went out and made something. They provided evidence. More than you can say for the residential school hoax in Canada.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And, of course, you have countries that gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. it turns it into something else.
Yeah.
And I've always hoped that, you know, the U.S. never does it. But we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking
system. And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get-out-of-jail-free card, right? We could print as much money as we want, and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything, because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery rounds.
But then you can roll over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Better Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us, so it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go, KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go, the best investment of the last 2+ years. And you just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. This is going to be a jam-packed final segment here on War Room Live. AlexJonesLive.com. I got a bunch of videos to go to, some very good ones. And I do want to remind you, where is it, that this hat is now available at thealexjonesstore.com. Should I just wear it? Should I just wear it the whole show? I think it's a good enough looking hat. I think I could wear this the whole show. Nobody would even question it. They might question where I got it. The answer would be from thealexjonesstore.com, of course. It's one of the 250th anniversary patriotic hats. It's got 1776 with the guns crossed on top. I'm telling you, there's something about this design. I just can't get over it. It's just so cool. What am I supposed to say? Right now, the America's 250th birthday limited edition 4th of July apparel sale is on. This collection is 30% off. Make the order now so you can get it before July 3rd. And actually, the date is on the site there. Order before June 28th at 11:59 p.m. in order to guarantee it arrives at
at or before July 3rd, so you have it in time for that 250th anniversary. You don't want to show up to the 4th of July barbecue without a cool hat, all right? Don't embarrass George Washington's ghost. You're going to want to show up being decked out head to toe in the most patriotic gear you can find. The best place to get it is thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, the supplements are on sale as well. Methylene Blue right now is buy one, get one free. It's the summer sale kickoff event. Buy one, get one for Methylene Blue tincture. Buy one, get one half off for T3 Trifecta iodine tincture. And, of course, 30% off the patriotic apparel, including the coolest hat ever made, the 1776 hat. Yeah, the crew comes around. I'm trying to fix my hair here. Maybe I'll just keep the hat on. You know, maybe no, we're taking it off. But I am wearing it as soon as I get outside, as soon as I'm done with this show. All right, with that, I got a bunch of, like I said, really powerful videos to go to. Let's begin with clip number one here, as after all, today, Clive Davis has passed away. Clive Davis has passed away, and he has a very long and storied history. He's one of these guys that you might not know his name if you're not in the conspiracy world. You might not be super aware of the influence that he has had, but he is one of the invisible orchestrators of America's culture. And for the last several decades, he has been a kingpin designing and shaping the minds of our youth through dictating the music that is popular. Let's go now to clip number one, where you can see a couple of historically minded men discuss a 1995 secret meeting at Clive Davis's house in Beverly Hills. Let's watch.
In that 1995 meeting in Beverly Hills, in the home of Clive Davis, who was responsible for the murder of Whitney Houston, I said it. His days are numbered. And there were rappers there from all over the country. They were invited to the home of Clive Davis, along with members of the CIA, FBI, which they didn't understand why the government was there, including many directors and CEOs of the private prisons throughout the United States was at that meeting in the mansion of Clive Davis. And they were telling these rappers, you need to create songs talking about killing police, calling black women bees and hoes. You need to get more nasty so we can fill our prisons that we're building.
Okay. You know what's crazy? During that time, I can recall when that gangster music came into play.
That's it.
And how they, you know, I don't know if the guys rapping it really knew, but they created the atmosphere.
Yes.
But it went from, I remember guys wanting to wear like the African chains around their neck,
yes,
dancing and the haircuts, flat tops, kid and play.
Flat top,
Kwame,
yeah,
to the really thugged out and
yes,
just the gang stuff. And I can recall going into like liquor stores or different places, and all they had was blue and red rags.
Right.
It was just like that stuff was on program.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that last part is really a brilliant, you know, deduction of what came from this. Because it, you know, it wasn't just about filling the private prison systems, although I wouldn't be surprised if that was a, you know, very pertinent concern for, you know, the industrial masters. But the whole creation of an artificial division, are you red or are you blue? Are you Crips or are you Bloods? We're going to divide the whole population, the whole, you know, black youth population. You're either on one side or the other, and the only thing you care about is killing people from the other side. It's like a metaphor. I mean, it's like a, you know, a children's story or something with just how cut and dry and clear it is, where it's just like, oh, look, populations that are literally exactly the same. We're going to divide them right down the middle. We're going to say that team's the left team and that team's the right team. This is red, they're blue. Have at it, boys. And people do it. You know, it's an inclination. It's, you know, we are herd animals. We want a team, you know, that's beside us. Obviously, if you grow up in a lawless and dangerous neighborhood, you're going to be forced to choose one way or the other. But think about this. How did rap culture go from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and friggin' that type of stuff to gangster Tupac, Snoop? Because the secret to understand, the thing you need to comprehend and is evident from the way Hollywood has been the last couple of years, is the one thing you know it wasn't about is money. Because you know that if Hollywood or if the music industry was motivated by money, they would have done a whole lot of different stuff over the last few years. What we've learned from the last couple of years of Hollywood film production, totally incontrovertibly, is that they don't care about losing money if it progresses their political agenda. You know what would have made a ton of money is a Star Wars movie that was good. How about a Star Wars movie where you have a hero who overcomes a challenge? What if we did that? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, they could be printing money right now, but they didn't want to print money. They wanted to have a girl boss hero. They wanted the Force to be female. They wanted to take this potential for infinite profit creation, and they wanted to utilize that to progress their political agenda. And so everything they make sucks. They make no money, but they keep making it. And the people who make the movies that make no money keep getting hired to make more movies that continue to not make any money. So it's not about money, folks. And this is just as true now as it was in the 1990s. It wasn't like, rap that's violent is popular, so we're going to follow that trend. Hey, the money's going that way, we go that way too, and it's not our fault this is what's popular, we're just giving the people what they want. That's not how this works. That's, people want to blame capitalism. But like, think about the fact that, I mean, hell, BlackRock came out and straight up said it and was like, we have to force people's behavior, we're going to withhold money unless you do these certain things. Again, do you think that there was a big clamoring, you know, audience or customer base of transgender children that were just desperate for bathing suits where you could tuck, you know, like that wasn't a thing that the market demanded, but that was a thing Target rolled out because it would get them a higher corporate credit score, essentially, from BlackRock. The ESG score would go up if they were deliberately making, you know, big displays celebrating trans children. That's what they were going to do. No, they didn't sell any of these. This wasn't a profit thing. Just like gangster rap wasn't about profit. There were other motives. There were ulterior motives. And there were probably a lot of them. You can keep the black population divided by making them pick team blue or team red. And it, I mean, I'm telling you folks, go read a history of Justinian or the Byzantine court. At that time, there were chariot races. That was like the NFL of the day, was chariot races. Gladiator fights had sort of gone the way of the dodo bird, but the chariot races became this big cultural fixture, and there were the reds, or I'm sorry, there were the greens and the blues. Did it mean anything? Not really. They sort of started to coalesce around, like, I can't remember which one it was, because it's arbitrary, they're just random colors, but, you know, the green were the more, like, elite, and the blue were the more, you know, lower class people. That was more or less the division, but it became like a major political division. But it's just reminiscent of that, where it's like, okay, you take your population that could combine to attack you, and you, again, split them down the middle, assign them with a color, and say, your enemy is that color now. Blues are against greens. Fight. And they do, and they would fight, and they would tear each other down. And this was, in many cases, a deliberate strategy by Justinian and Theodora to create division. And like, literally they play into it, where it was like, Justinian was green team and Theodora was blue team. And so then the people, you know, got to like, you know, read whatever the equivalent of the newspaper, or the X of the time was. It'd be all this gossip about like, oh, well, you know, there's this big problem because she's blue and he's green. And so, I mean, how can they even live together? It's like, it's all this artificial division created on purpose just for the division, to create the division. I mean, that's sort of the end result, is divide and conquer, but these people are already conquered. It's just divide and remain conquered, I guess is how you could put it. But I thought that was an interesting little video from about Clive Davis. And you can look into the claims made for it, made in that video for yourself. Now I want to go to a video. This one might be kind of shocking to you, but give it a second. But just give it a second, okay? Because I saw this video posted with the simple label, I'm glad Charlie Kirk died. Okay. I'd like to hear this. Clip 24. This is a leftist talking about why he's happy that Charlie Kirk got assassinated. Let's watch.
I'm actually glad that Charlie Kirk was murdered, but probably not for the reason you think. I was at work when I first found out. A fellow employee had wandered up to me, cell phone in hand, and asked, "Did you hear that Charlie Kirk just got assassinated?" And I, without even a moment's hesitation, responded, "Good! That Nazi white supremacist piece of shit." I had never before witnessed such a perfectly blended expression of disgust, disappointment, sadness, and surprise, all through the window of another man's eyes, or experienced a silence so uncomfortable as the one that followed, and although that look on his face now haunts me more and more with each passing day, at the time, it only made me distrustful and upset. But little did I know that the sentence which followed would end up becoming the most profoundly psychologically impactful question that I've ever been confronted with. Have you ever actually watched any of his debates? I decided to end the conversation immediately. This man was clearly a lost cause, one of those intellectually dishonest Kool-Aid drinking types who refuses to engage in good faith with any perspective which contradicts their outstandingly narrow and propagandized worldview. And by this man, I mean me. Because I hadn't actually watched any of his debates. I was basing literally every single thing I believe about a human being with thousands of hours worth of publicly available recordings of himself openly expressing his opinions on a small handful of out-of-context clips that had been curated for me by algorithms and media organizations being funded by the political opposition. I foamed at the mouth, right along with the rest of those rabid and bloodthirsty dogs, gleefully mocking those who had been saddened by his death and downplaying the atrocity of it all by suggesting that political violence is just an unfortunate yet necessary step toward our coveted socialist revolution. That is, until I began to notice a common thread. The exact same comment being repeated ad nauseum in nearly every single online space. Have you ever actually watched any of his debates? I didn't think much of it at first. Of course right-wingers are all regurgitating the exact same talking point. They're in a cult. They're brainwashed. It was an ordinary and boring morning on the day I found out that I am a monster. In that moment where my curiosity got the best of me and I decided to click on some random YouTube thumbnail of Charlie Kirk with his goofy and gummy smile in an attempt to reaffirm my preconceived biases. And it was an unusually stressful afternoon on that very same day when I spoke to my father for the first time in years, despite the fact that he had always loved and supported me unconditionally. And it was a never-ending sleepless night, coming to terms with the fact that literally every single thing I thought I hated about the right, the bigotry, stupidity, violence, vitriol, and narrow-mindedness was actually just an outward projection of hatred toward my own self. Charlie Kirk is my hero. He opened my eyes to the cruel and manipulative nature of our political media, brought my family back together, and taught me how to love again. And to anyone who takes issue or offense with that, I'm going to do exactly what he would have done, and challenge you to answer a simple, honest, and straightforward question. Have you ever actually watched any of his debates?
It's like, I mean, whoa. I mean, could you get a better video than that? And hey, maybe, I believe, by the way, Shibuki underscore sunshine on TikTok was the account that uploaded that. I assume that's that guy's name. Shabooki underscore sunshine. So shout out to Shibuki sunshine. And it's like this, it can happen. It can happen. It can happen just like that. Do you know how many times I've said that exact phrase? Usually about Alex Jones. But whether it's Alex Jones or myself or Charlie Kirk, it's a consistent phenomenon. Have you actually watched it? Well, I mean, I've seen plenty of... No. But have you actually watched the show? I think I know enough about what you covered to understand. No. But have you actually watched... Of course, the answer is always no. Always. And you just... We pray. We hang our hat. We, in fact, only do what we do every day. We are committed to this, at times, seemingly impossible mission to rescue this country and awaken the world to the dangers that we face and the lies that their outlook is dictated by. We predicate all of this on that glimmer, that little shimmer, that little slice of hope that says maybe, just maybe, the person we're talking to is capable of independent thought. Maybe they will go out and watch a video. Maybe they'll actually think about it. Maybe they, like Shibuki Sunshine, will realize they're the bad guys after all. And it's like every once in a while you just need that little injection of hope. You need that little reminder that, hey, this is possible. People can wake up. As frustrating as it can be, trying to get them to just acknowledge reality. Occasionally, a spectacular moment happens like that. Of course, it's unfortunate it took the death of Charlie Kirk to bring that about. But hopefully videos like that from Shibuki Sunshine, who, frankly, we should try to get him on the show. Because, I mean, that was just incredibly powerful. That was incredibly good. I would love to know, you know, sort of what his political process has been, where he is now, where he started, if you could explain that. Because we can say, I mean, it's just not the same. We can sit here and go, these people are brainwashed. They believe lies about these people. They think all of this stuff. It is nothing compared to a person actually saying, I was the bad guy. It's not just that I was wrong about the right wing. I was diametrically wrong. I was absolutely the opposite of what I thought I was. I mean, that is really something exceptional. I think that's fantastic. Now, you may know, folks, Prime Minister Keir Starmer has resigned, ending probably the most embarrassing prime ministership in the UK history. It's almost comical how badly he failed at literally everything. This guy came into office. Well, first he'd gotten to office. He paid his dues, by which I mean spent an entire career allowing pedophiles to get away with their crimes. So he paid his dues to the British establishment, was appointed prime minister, basically made everything worse for everybody, tried to write laws to stop everybody from talking about how much worse he was making everything, and is now resigned in absolute disgrace. Disgrace, he'll be remembered primarily for being two-tier Keir, presiding over the complete dissolution of the House of Lords, as well as jury trials in the United Kingdom, the massive expansion of the surveillance state and digital ID, the importation of millions of hostile foreigners, the cover-up of their crimes. What an abysmal, hilarious failure this quote-unquote man has proven to be. And on top of it all, he looks like a vaguely gay bobblehead. On top of all of it, the man looks like, well, I don't know what he looks like. I'm trying to figure it out, actually. I don't know, but I know that I wouldn't, like, he kind of looks like a middle school professor, but would you trust him around children? That's why I'm struggling to explain exactly what he looks like, because what he looks like and what he is are completely different. He looks like a lesbian. He looks like a harmless, testosterone-free, beta male pushover cuck. But in fact, he's a ruthless agent of the globalist, a heartless, you know, functionary of the global anti-human system. He's not exactly harmless. He's just a bobblehead. He just looks like a bobblehead. Let's go now to, we're going to go to clip 19 and then 20 together. This is George Galloway talking about the resignation of Keir Starmer in a way that only he can, and with an expression, with a phrase that I think really should illustrate just how bad this guy really was, because George Galloway is like a hardcore leftist socialist. But here's what he had to say about the resignation of Keir Starmer.
Somebody asked me today, why are you saying Starmer was the worst prime minister ever? Have you forgotten Margaret Thatcher? I said, Margaret Thatcher hated me, but she never tried to stop me speaking.
Yes.
She never set the police on me with guns mm-hmm. to arrest me in an airport, in public. She never did, pardon me, any of those things.
Yeah.
And so that's why I say Starmer is worse. He has instituted a reign of intellectual terror where you are told in the most Orwellian ways you're not allowed to say that a woman can't have a penis. Sorry mm-hmm. to introduce that, but right. it's a big issue in Britain. It's illegal to say it. If I'm confronted by
say
a
that
guy,
again, you're not allowed to say that a woman cannot have a penis.
You're not allowed to say that. It's illegal
because that's discriminatory.
That's you're misgendering, and you are encouraging hate. I am confronted by a 250-pound gorilla wearing a wig, and if I call him he rather than she, I've committed a criminal offense. Mm-hmm. A British prime minister is akin to an American president.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have quite the executive authority. There is a nominal monarch, sovereign above him, but it's only nominal. What the prime minister says goes. So we've now replaced a guy that was at least elected with a guy that nobody has elected, not even the Labour Party members, because it's looking like a coronation. It's looking like he'll be the only candidate in the race. So no one will have voted for him, but he will have all power in the state, power over our foreign policy, our attitude to the EU, to the Ukraine war, power over economic policy, power over everything. It's an executive. Prime minister originates in the Latin primus inter pares, first amongst equals. But they're not equals anymore. The prime minister calls the shots. And we've got an unelected one coming up fast.
Kind of reminds you of Biden and Kamala, doesn't it? A little parliamentary behind-the-scenes trickery, and suddenly an unelected appointed bureaucrat has all the powers of an elected prime minister, and we'll see how long that goes. Just out of time to play a couple videos. I'll have to save for tomorrow. Yeah, we'll have to save these for tomorrow. I got a bunch of stuff I wasn't able to get to today that we will hit tomorrow, including a video explaining, and, you know, this is kind of interesting, but there's a lot of controversy online about, anyway, we don't need to get into it here. Like paganism and Nazism and all this sort of stuff, and some very interesting research that was done that shows that basically the whole, like, occult paganism aspect of the right wing was deliberately seeded by people that don't believe in that stuff, but, you know, do want to trick everybody into going off the going down a historical dead end in that way. I'll play that video tomorrow. You'll have to tune in tomorrow to War Room Live, of course, at 3 p.m. Central Time. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself one of these incredible hats before they sell out, 1776. You only have a few more days to order and make your purchases at thealexjonesstore.com to guarantee that it arrives on July 3rd so you can be decked out, looking stylish and patriotic come July 4th. Hats sometimes make my ears stick out. I got to wear it in a very particular way. I'm telling you, I'm obsessed with this hat. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Thealexjonesstore.com right now. Methylene Blue Tincture is buy one, get one absolutely free. T3. Nascent Iodine Tincture is buy one, get one 50% off. That's the summer sale kickoff event. It ends Wednesday, so make those orders now while you still can. And, of course, get your 250th birthday apparel right now at 30% off. Order it today so it arrives in time for Independence Day this July 4th. Signing off. This has been Harrison Smith. I will see you tomorrow.
Took him 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the All Options Network, and the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test for previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, AlexJonesLive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, AlexJonesApp.com, following us on X at Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at Rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.